We are now recording.
Good morning. It's February the 2nd, 2022. It's time to call the Board of Technical Registration to session. Kurt, could you do the roll call, please?
Clayton Campbell. Jack Gilmore.
Here.
Helen Hack.
Here.
Jennifer Hovick.
Here.
Michael Koleka.
Here.
Colleen Lindgren. Lance McAllister.
Here.
Stephen Noel.
Here.
Stacy Skanky. Kent Wilson. We have a quorum.
Thank you, Kurt. Okay, let's move on to the adoption of minutes. Is there a motion to approve the January 25th minutes?
I move that we approve the minutes.
I'll second that, Chair.
Thank you. We have a motion to second. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Koleka?
Aye.
Thank you. And right now, Kirby and everybody else on the listening in of our members.
Just Mike.
Just Mike, okay.
Mr. Chair, if I may just... as we do have a bare quorum, if there's any matter on which any board member has a conflict, we would have to defer that until we have more members.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, call to the public.
Excuse me, Colleen Lindgren is here.
Oh, great. Let the record show that Ms. Lindgren is now present. That gives us 7. Okay, call the public. Members of the public may address the board during the call to the public for no more than 3 minutes. Pursuant to ARS 38431.01H, the board members are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public, unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. However, members may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that a matter be placed on a future agenda. Anybody wishing to address the board? Please come forward and identify yourself, please.
Definitely. My name is Christoph Lohr. I'm a licensed professional engineer here in Arizona. Been so since 2012 under the mechanical discipline. I'm actually here on behalf of an organization that I'm a volunteer member of, the American Society of Plumbing Engineers. We have petitioned the Arizona Board of Technical Registration couple of times over the last 4 years. In essence, what we are working on is the creation of a plumbing exam option under the mechanical discipline. So not a new discipline, but basically to another examination that would coincide with the HVAC and other examinations. In the realm of construction, licensure is required in order to sign off on blueprints for buildings, which I've done here in Arizona. A number of buildings actually around town that I have my license on. Within the realm of MEP consulting, typically HVAC, electrical, plumbing are the two main three disciplines within the MEP world. Both mechanical, HVAC, and electrical have examinations. However, plumbing does not, which puts engineers like myself at a disadvantage. So we petitioned the board, again, I think it was 4 years and 2 years ago, to send a letter of recommendation to NCDS, which the board at that time did. NCS got an additional 9 letters from 9 other boards across the country, including Nevada, Utah, and New Mexico, some of our neighboring states here, that were also in favor of that. So NCS started the creation of an exam to look at what it would take. Now they came back and they said, the letter from Arizona, we want a little bit more detail. And what I would ask is that the board put some time on the next agenda, on your next meeting. We have 90 days to get this. We were just notified last week, so a little bit of a time crunch. And I'd be more than happy to come back down. I live right here in Phoenix. But we'd love to have a conversation about the public health and safety aspect and need of this, in addition to the fairness side, I think, too. But just ask the board to consider that as an agenda item for the next meeting.
Very good. Also, we can't discuss it this morning, but yeah, I think with your prior effort, and we have an NCES member here that we might get some insight on later.
Excellent.
Thank you for coming before the board.
Thank you.
Christoph, make sure you reach out to myself or to Kurt. So
yeah. I've been emailed with Kurt already.
Oh.
So. No, definitely would be happy to. Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you. Kurt?
Chairman, I have Bob B. With his hand up remotely. You know, just curious if maybe he wants to participate in the public or has a comment.
Bob online, did you have a call to the public that you wanted to make?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much. I appreciate you allowing me this opportunity to present before the board or make a request. And my request pertains to, related to the alarm industry, there are two different registrations. One is for agent and one is for primary controller. And it seems that the current ruling and the current structure is much more favored towards a larger company, which has, you know, many agents and maybe one or two primary or controlling parties, rather. So there are two separate fees involved. So related to, say, a smaller company or like myself, where I'm basically, you know, a one-man show with you know, several people in my periphery, registering for both can be, you know, cost prohibitive on top of the other many expenses that smaller participants have, you know, other licensing, insurance, and the list goes on and on, as I'm sure you're well aware. And I would like to ask the board to consider some sort of alternative for a smaller company like myself that might not have to pay for, you know, 3 years in advance of both of those two licensing through the BTR. It would be quite nice to just, you know, and it seems to me that if the same person is the controlling party and the agent, you know, maybe there's some sort of alternative you could present to us to save us some money.
Ted? Could you state your last name for the record, please?
Yeah, it's Brett, B-R-E-T-T.
Thank you.
And that's all I have for today. Is there any chance, has that been presented before, or has that been considered? I can't imagine I'm the only person to request
that.
Yeah, we can't discuss that this morning, Mr. Brett, but I think if you could reach out to the board here, maybe we can get this agendized on a future session.
Oh, okay. Okay, I can do that.
Great. Thanks for calling in.
Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Have a good day.
Thank you. Okay, any other calls to the public, from the public? All right. Let's move on to the enforcement matters. These are items 6A. We've got some members here for 6A2 and A3 that I'd like to go ahead and start with. These two are obviously joined together, so we will start with discussion on 6A2, but really applies to 6A3 as well. The synopsis of this complaint is that on October 24, 2021, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent, in her capacity as a plan reviewer with the City of Phoenix, exerted her professional judgment on design plans prepared by Daniel Demlin, registered architect, against his own professional judgment in direct opposition to ARS 32125B, BTR Substantive Policy 1, and failed to seal her professional judgment. Okay. Mr. Cathell, you want to... Mr. Demlin, I think, is here. Let's start with Mr. Demlin. You're the alleger. So if you could give us just a very brief summary of why you're here, then I want to share the floor with the respondent, and then we'll have Mr. Carthel.
Generally, we have the alleges on the line as well. I mean, the respondents on the line as well, as we should.
Okay. I was assuming that Ms. Chen was here. No?
She's online.
Online. Okay. Mr. Demlin, please, give us a summary.
Sure. Thank you, Chairman, board members, director, staff, and guests. I've been on the EAC for over 20 years, And these complaints have found their foundation in the substantial policy statement, and I'd like to read part of that. Documents that are signed and sealed by registrants that represent the exercise of the registrant's professional discretion and judgment are professional documents. Arizona Revised Statute Section 32.125 requires registrants to seal plans, specifications, plats, or reports prepared by the registrant or his or her bona fide employee. Substitution of a registrant's professional judgment that results in modification to those documents constitutes practice of the profession. The policy continues, any person checking documents for compliance with any applicable statutes, codes, ordinance, rules, or regulations such as building codes, fire codes, or zoning ordinances may quote unquote redline or and or list required changes to meet the codes, as this is not part of the practice of the profession. Continuing that that line of shelter, the policy says, shall not modify in any manner a document embodying the discretion or judgment of a registrant unless citing a specific code or standard to support the modification. These points were directly stipulated by the LNR committee in the September 20th meeting of last year as being clear and precise and needing no further judgment. Problem is, what constitutes professional judgment? The board has never defined it, neither has any jurisdiction in the state of Arizona. I come with three specific points on this complaint. Point one, ARS 32-125E. Now, section 125 regulates the use of seals by registrants. Paragraph E has a very specific statement I want to read. It says, if the board requires the registrant to use a seal, the registrant is responsible for the documents that the registrant signs, stamps, seals, including those documents prepared by the registrant's bona fide employee. This is imperative because this supports the public expectation of ARS 32-101A. The courts and legislatures have traditionally used language like this to further pinpoint that responsibility to the registrant's sealing of documents. The registrant is responsible for anything under that seal, no matter who places it or requires it. So the question is, if I am directed by jurisdiction to make a change that I do not agree with, do I not become the bona fide employee of that jurisdiction? That's the question at point here. Let me bring that point to that responsibility. The Honorable James Deutsch ruling in support of and support by the appellate courts in the Hyatt Regency collapse established a test for responsibility. His test was, if you cannot proceed to the next point without sign-off from that person has responsibility. The building official's designated representative, in this case, plan review respondent Chin, has that authority. No approval, no permit. That authority was executed in one case that I cited in my complaint that says very clearly, there was two ways to look at the code. She usurped my authority by interpreting her position over mine. I contend that that's a point of liability under the Deutsch ruling. Point three, this type of choice made adds cost to my client and possibly to me, because in some contracts, I'm required to redesign the budget if we come over budget. If the city or the jurisdiction requires me to make changes that cost money, I could be responsible or my client pays more. For this particular case in the complaint, it's probably about $25,000 to $35,000 cost for a 20-foot tall window to quote-unquote unconceal something that can't even be seen anyway. This is systemic abuse of professional judgment and has shown itself throughout the plan review of this. Had another case on this very set of plans where the mechanical engineer changed his definition of what a commercial kitchen was from a project I worked with him a year before, forcing an added type 1 hood.
Mr. Devlin, I guess I want to clarify the fact this board doesn't get in the habit of interpreting code.
I understand it. The question is, whose judgment? This is systemic. Maricopa County Health Services have this design guideline that they make us design kitchens to. Anyone who's designed it knows it. You realize that 90% of that design document isn't supported by the code they're supposed to enforce, the 2013 FDA food code? This is systemic. We need to get an answer to what is professional judgment. Where do I get to tell the plan reviewer, no, you are incorrect? Right now, they issued a permit. I don't have a choice. And that's assuming responsibility and liability on me, making me an employee, if you will, of the jurisdiction. Because the policy is very, very clear. It's professional judgment. But no one's ever defined that professional judgment. Back late last year when I approached the board to ask for that definition, it was referred to LNR. LNR says it doesn't need it. There it is. And the LNR said, well, if there's a problem, file a complaint. Okay. I'm here filing a complaint on LNR's direction because we need to get this defined.
Mr. Dimlin, I understand your issue here is the interpretation of the code. There is an appeal process.
I want to address that, if I may, because, yes, there is an appeal process in 107. When I came to the impasse with these plan reviewers, I met with the billing official for City of Phoenix as well as others. Two things came out of that meeting. Number one, he is going to support his staff. Number two, after asking a direct question about some past history, the way code's been enforced over my career, he made the statement emphatically that it is, he believed it was his authority to direct any registrant to violate federal or state law if it was within his realm of interpreting code. That is an abuse of power. This is the same wolf that's watching the hen house who I have to appeal to. I already know where the appeal's going. We made the decision after that meeting. There's no reason to appeal. We already know where it's going to go. It's going to waste time, waste money, and time right now for projects are imperative. We've got to get them on. If you haven't seen, impacts on cost rise exponentially.
I want to give a chance to the respondent, Ms. Chen, if she's on the line.
And they also have
your attorney,
counsel, Danny Inglis.
Okay. Ms. Chen and Mr. Inglis, do you want to share with the board your position on this?
Hi there. Yes, this is Danny Inglese with the Phoenix City Attorney's Office. First, thanks for giving us the opportunity to come here and talk about these cases. At the outset, I want to say that, you know, as to Ms. Chen's case, our defense is quite narrow. Mr. Demlin is speaking on many issues that are unfortunately outside of the complaint against her. As to her, this board, of course, must only look at her actions. As I explained in our response letter to the board, it appears this entire dispute comes down to the interpretation of Building Code Section 713.4 regarding fire resistance ratings and hoistways. Ms. Chen believed reasonably that that was what applied to the hoistway at issue. Mr. Demlin disagreed. And as the board has already pointed out, that's exactly why the appeal process exists. I wanted to also push back on Mr. Demlin's suggestion that there's no way to know what professional judgment is. I agree that it may be useful for the board to clarify that for their own purposes, as Mr. Demlin is suggesting, but absent some kind of board directive, it's very clear from the statutes. For example, the practice of architecture is any professional service or creative work requiring architectural education, training, and experience, etc., and it's similar for engineering. Code interpretation does not require that kind of specialized training. That kind of specialized training can be useful, but ultimately, I'm an attorney, and while you don't want me putting the building plans together, I can absolutely read the code and say what I think it means. These are not issues that require the sort of specialized training. Again, that context could be helpful, but these are words on paper. We're just trying to figure out what they mean. We have code reviewers who do have that technical background, but who ultimately are making decisions that don't have to do with the professional exercise of judgment. They're reading the code, they're applying the code, and applicants have the ability, if they want, to appeal to the building official. The building official, by the way, Stephen Dudley, is on the line. I'm sure he would be willing to answer technical questions that you guys may have. But ultimately, you know, we agree with the independent assessments of this complaint that you know, it's a code interpretation issue, and thus any allegation that there was professional judgment being exercised here just doesn't carry water. And of course, for the reasons that this case should be dismissed, there's no underlying there's no underlying reason for the case against Jeff Barton, which is brought against the city as a whole, essentially, to proceed either, because Mr. Demlin has yet to identify a situation in which a plan reviewer has exercised their professional judgment. So that's the city's position, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Inglés. Ms. Chan or Mr. Dudley, do you want to add anything to that very briefly?
At this point, I would say the final resolution was suggested by the architect, not from us.
Right. Yeah, I understand that. I read through that. Okay. Mr. Carthill, you give us the staff's position on this?
Most of it's been touched on for the most part. Although I do understand Mr. Dimlin's frustration and it represents a pretty substantial cost on his part. The most direct basis of the complaint was BTR's substantive policy one. Unfortunately, that policy is not enforceable. It's advisory in nature. So I did not consider it as something to enforce. The statute that relates more directly to reviewers is ARS 32130. Any modifications except for building code compliance reviews, field inspections, and applicable design standards to drawings, plans, or design specifications submitted for review to the state or a political subdivision of the state and that are made by a professional registrant employed or under contract with the state or political subdivision of the state shall be signed and issued under the seal of the reviewing registrant. The key word there would be modification. Mrs. Chin's response indicated that she did not make any modifications. A conversation I had with Mr. Dimlin, although he has some definite frustrations, which I understand, he did acknowledge that there weren't modifications made to his plans, but there was some modifications that he was required to make himself. That was the basis for where we went with that. We also did have two EAC members review this, and they both came to the conclusion that she was not required under enforceable statutes or rules to stamp or seal the documents.
Great. Thank you. Kurt?
I'd just like to say that Dr. Campbell is now has joined the meeting.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Wait. I'm going to open this up for discussion with the board. Any board members want to add discussion to this?
Sure, I have a question.
Certainly.
From what you just mentioned, you said no modifications made to the plan, but there was some modification that he had to do?
So that according to the respondent's response, which was given through Mr. Inglés, she cited a building code, I guess it was a fire code, mm-hmm. that needed to be addressed. It also, in the response, further indicated that the solution was presented by Mr. Dimlin instead of being something outlined that he directly had to change. But that they did, you know, state that something needed to be changed to be brought up to code. I'm not real familiar with that code myself. So
as a... It was a code review, and she was asking for at least a one-hour prior reading, and so he had to change his plans. He came up with a solution. So he changed his plans to meet her request to upgrade the plans to meet fire code. That's kind of the issue here.
Actually, the technical reviewer who she consulted was the one who proposed it, and I was forced to agree with it. I did not come up with the solution.
Okay. Any other board members want to add to this?
Who's the one that came up with the, what is it, a 20-foot window?
That was suggested by her technical reviewer. He said, if I put this window on the backside of the elevator core where the stairs are for the preschool students, that would make it no longer concealed. My question was, when you stand in front of the stairs, it's still concealed. He didn't have a logical continuation of the argument.
Doesn't an elevator have smoke detectors and stuff in them?
Yes, they do. But this particular one, because it's only two stories, would be a little bit more relaxed in the elevator code for that.
Smoke detectors? And
it would have some, but it wouldn't be as robust as you would see in a high rise.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a fan of a 20-foot window in a school. And I know they said it had to be a certain type of glass, which I understand because, you know, you got kids, it'll probably break. You know, the normal one, so that seems to be a legitimate request, but I'm not really too thrilled about the glass myself, but I'm not an architect.
Neither was I.
I'd like to read Architectural Drafting and Design, 5th edition by Thompson. The architect and engineer are responsible for determining which code will be used during the design process and ensuring that the structure complies with all required codes.
That's sorry, Mr. Hutch, what are you referencing?
It's a school book for architects.
But that's not Arizona statute or rule?
No. This is what they're being trained on. And this is what they're tested on.
But it's not anything they're held to by any
state? No, it's not a statute or anything like that. But this is what, and that brings me up to you know, whatever you were tested on, and this is part of what your responsibility is, that's what you need to sign. Anybody that wants to step beyond that, then they would have to sign. I think that's what A1 or whatever it is.
There's a specific exclusion for building per code review.
And this basically, you know, not everybody understands these standards. And as this book describes, a lot of man hours have been put into it to make sure that they work correctly in that. So,
Mr. Kalika, did you want to?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
I think you had an opinion to share with the board.
I would, yes, and I apologize. I was not able to be there in person today, but I appreciate the opportunity to call in for this. As the architect member on the board, I can certainly share some of Mr. Demlin's frustrations. I know myself; we are always working with different jurisdictions to find the most economical way to do our projects and at the same time also meet all the applicable building codes. And although sometimes we may not agree with the city's interpretation, at the end of the day, the city is the authority having jurisdiction, and as such, we have to follow their recommendations and their markups accordingly. So I don't see here any violation of ARS based on what the city has done on this project as well as all the others. And so I am in support of dismissing this case based on that.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Kalika. We have EACs that have recommended dismissal as well. So at this point...
Well, I agree. I move to dismiss.
Okay, we have a motion to dismiss. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a second.
Are you dismissing 6A2?
I'm sorry, yeah.
3,
that'll be a joint.
Joint.
A2 and A3. Okay, let's do a roll call.
Mr. Chair, if I may, was the second for both as well? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was originally stated that they were combined.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I just want to make sure the second clarified. Yeah.
Clarence, you're the second.
Yeah.
Okay, roll call vote?
Please.
Okay, Clinton Campbell. You're muted, sir.
Thank you. Aye.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Ahmed Hack.
Aye.
Jennifer Hobick.
Aye.
Michael Kalecka.
Aye.
Colleen Lindgren.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Stephen Noel.
Aye.
Kent Wilson.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you, Kurt. Mr. Dillon, I appreciate you coming down. And hope you'll get some favorable interpretations in the future, but I think we all deal with questionable interpretations from time to time, but we have to trust our code reviewers. Thanks for coming down.
Thank you all.
Okay. Items 6A, 1, 4, and 5 are here for dismissal. Kurt, I don't think there's anyone calling in on those.
I do not believe so. I have no call-ins for those items. Is there anybody here for those items in the audience?
Six A1.
4 and 5?
I'll make a motion.
Well, is there any discussion by the board members on these cases? Yeah, let's have a motion then.
I move to dismiss 6A1, 6A4, and 6A5.
Okay, we have a motion to dismiss 6A1, 4, and 5. There's a second from Mr. Noel. We're missing 4. We better do a roll call.
You can just do the vote in here and then do them one by one if you like as well.
That faster. It's probably faster. Okay, all those in favor of dismissing these three items, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Mr. Kalika?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
And Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Great. We have a unanimous vote. Okay. Let's move on to 6B. We have a caller for B3, Kurt.
We do Michael Roberts.
Okay, let's do that one first then. Okay, this is case number P22041 involving Mr. Michael Roberts, PE, civil. The synopsis of this complaint, on November the 30th, 2021, the board received a complaint alleging that on or about July 19th, 2021, the respondent, after contracting and being paid $400 deposit to prepare grading and drainage plans for 49239 North 7th Avenue, New River, provided the client with a grading and drainage plan for a different property, failed to deliver a corrected plan, and has failed to respond to all contact attempts. Okay, Mr. Roberts, you're online, please. Mr. Roberts?
I'll see him name. I don't see him listed.
Okay, he's on our list. Mr. Cathell, can you share a quick summary of this case? I think
sure.
That's pretty straightforward.
Yes, sir. So we received a complaint that a respondent was hired to do some drainage plans for a property. The complaint was that he was unresponsive, and when he did produce a product, it had the wrong address on it. It was for the wrong plan. I did speak with Mr. Roberts. He acknowledged that he sent the wrong plan by mistake. He also acknowledged that he didn't respond to a ledger in a timely manner as appropriate. But of his own volition, without my suggestion, he did issue a full refund. He said he did make some corrections to staffing. He had been a sole proprietor, but had hired a draftsman and a administrative assistant to help. He said he basically just got overwhelmed with new projects and lost track of stuff. The conclusion of the investigation was that although he, from his own acknowledgement, did not remain responsive as he should, that it didn't quite rise to the level of gross negligence. But part of that was that it only spread over about a month and a half, I believe. So it wasn't a huge amount of time.
Okay, thank you. We have a staff recommendation to issue a letter of concern. Is there any discussion by the board on this? Can I get a motion, please?
Make a motion that we follow the staff recommendation and dismiss this complaint.
And issue a letter of concern?
Oh, I'm sorry. Issue a letter of concern.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Thank you, Jennifer. All those in favor of issuing a letter of concern, please say aye.
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 Okay. Mr. Kalika?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, could the board, to be specific, could they identify for the staff what the basis of the letter of concern would be, just so staff can draft it?
Okay. This letter of concern really involves better communication with his clients. And I suppose we didn't see there was a contract for services?
I believe there was a contract, yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So I think this letter of concern really addresses the importance of consistent communication with his clients.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a motion. We've had a vote to support the issuance of a letter of concern. Now it's going through the roll call. Mr. Kalika?
Aye.
Okay. Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
And Ms. Lindgren?
Nay.
Okay. This vote is supported by, is that 8-1?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let's move on to items 6B, 1, and 2. Kurt, I don't think we have anybody online for those.
B, 1, and 2. I only had one for 6B, 3, all other Bs.
Okay.
Yeah, I would move to accept letter of concern for 6B, 1, and 6B, 2.
Great. We have a motion. Is there a second?
Based on staff recommendations for the letter of concern.
Okay, we have a motion to issue proposed, as proposed, letters of concern for items 6B1 and 6B2. Is there a second?
Dr. Campbell will second.
Thank you, Dr. Campbell. All those in favor of supporting this motion to issue letters of concern for 6B1 and 2, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Kalika?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
And Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Thank you. That's a unanimous vote, Kurt. Thank you. Okay, let's move on to item 6C. No one in attendance, Kurt?
After the C's, I do not have comments for the C's.
Item 6C1 through 5, we have signed letters of consent.
Signed consent agreements.
I'm sorry. Terminology. Is there a motion to...
I'd like to comment on 6C2.
Okay. We'll pull that one. Can we get a motion then for 6C1? 6, 3, 4, 5.
6C1, 6C3, 6, 3, 4... and 6, 3, 5 for accepting letter of concern according to the staff.
So we have a motion to the recommendation for 6C1, 6C3, 6C4, and 6C5.
Can you repeat your motion just because it's a signed consent agreements and not letters of concern?
I said letter of concern.
Yeah.
Sounded so good. Okay, I move to accept the signed consent orders for 6C1, C2,
Six.
Excuse me, C3, C4, and C5.
All right, thank you. We have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second the motion.
Thank you. Okay, all those in favor of supporting and accepting the signed consent agreements for 6C1, 6C3, 4, and 5, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, Mr. Kalika?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, let's get to 6C2. This is case number HI22-005. The synopsis of this complaint is on July 29, 2021. The board received a complaint alleging that respondent, after conducting a home inspection at 7115 East Flamenco Drive in Tucson, Arizona, on or about July 22, 2021, failed to report on the correct age of an AC unit, failed to correctly identify the materials of the walls inside the home, failed to report on the entire second electrical box, failed to accurately identify the type of piping for in-home, and failed to report that most of the outlets in the home have false grounds. Okay. Mr. Garthel, can you give us a summary of this?
Yes, sir. So this complaint came in as you had, had read. Didn't speak with, apologize, I didn't speak with her. She did provide me with a statement on her home inspection. I did speak with another registrant who, I'm sorry, I'll backtrack a little bit so this makes more sense. So she was hired to conduct that inspection. According to the alleger, the inspection only took about an hour and a half, which he found suspicious. So he hired a second inspector to come do a secondary one. The second one came back with a lot more red flags for the home. The second inspector met with respondent and went over her report with her and identified with her several points where she was lacking. I did speak with him. His description was that her report was far below standard, and but she was responsive to him and willing to learn. So we sent it out for assessment. Both assessments came back that there were several points that she had missed and voiced concern. They suggested an EAC meeting. We did convene and have an EAC meeting, which the respondent did attend. Conclusion of the EAC meeting was that they unsubstantiated all of the initial allegations from the complaint, but did identify, I believe it was 10 points that she was missing from her inspection report. The recommendation from the EAC meeting was peer reviews and to kind of help get her up to standard. After the EAC meeting, she had mentioned that she was no longer practicing and that she has let go of her business since that time due to some family issues and some health issues. I offered I proposed a consent agreement to her, which included administrative penalty, cost of investigation, and the peer reviews that were recommended by the EAC meeting. In her response, she stated that she would rather give up her license in lieu of that, being that the peer reviews would be very difficult to do, being that she's no longer practicing. So I redrafted the proposed consent agreement to include the surrender or voluntary surrender of her license, which she did agree to and sign.
Okay. Yeah, we have a signed consent agreement here. Okay. Mr. Hack, you had
No, he answered part of it there.
Okay. All right.
I move to accept the signed consent order for 62.
Okay, we have a motion to accept the signed consent agreement for 6C2. Second?
Second my clip.
Mr. Kalika, thank you. So we have a motion and a second. All those in favor supporting the consent agreement, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, Mr. Kalika?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Thank you. That's a unanimous vote. Okay, let's get on to 61. This is case number P22-020. The synopsis of the complaint: on September the 24th, 2021, the board received a complaint that alleged during the 2018, respondent engaged in the practice of engineering on a home-built project located at 10758 East Troon North Drive in Scottsdale, Arizona. Without registration of the board, by altering design documents prepared and sealed by Franklin Boxberger, civil engineer, it is further alleged that respondent applied forged seals to a professional documents related to a home build project located at 10758 East Troon North Drive in Scottsdale, and that on or about April the 25th, 2018, respondent fraudulently applied the seal and signature of Christopher Charles Sinclair, P.E., to the City of Scottsdale request for a waiver form for a home-built project located at Same address, 10758 Eastern North Drive in Scottsdale. It is also alleged that respondent through respondent firm's website advertised to the public that he was an NCARB registered architect without board registration. Board records show no indication that respondent nor respondent firm have ever been registered with the board. Okay, we have attendees. Please identify yourself.
My name is Jennifer Duncan. I'm the public.
Alleger.
Raymond Duncan. I'm Jennifer's alleger.
Okay. And the respondent, Kurt, is not online.
Correct. I do not have a call in.
Mr. Chair, I heard from the attorney of the respondent who's indicated that they wouldn't be here.
Okay, thank you.
Only the allegers here, if I may follow them.
Sure. Do you guys want a shared presentation?
Sure. So my name is Jennifer Duncan. Ray and I have been married for 18 years. We have two teenage daughters. And when he retired several years ago, we moved back here to Arizona. It was previously our home. And we contacted Tom LeBlanc. This was in late 2017. He represented himself as a design build firm person. Who was an architect and a builder, who could design and build basically our family dream home. Everything he told us was a lie. He's not an architect. I mean, everything kind of started coming out after we moved into the house a little over 2 years ago. We moved in under a temporary certificate of occupancy. We still can't get a permanent certificate of occupancy. We can't get the structure certified. We can't get retaining wall certified. He totally ignored grading and drainage plans. So what you hear today from Investigator Raim is just the tip of the iceberg. This is going to take years and a substantial amount of money to figure out. We've done everything we can up until this point to get him to take responsibility. We filed complaints with the ROC already. He's received warning letters that he violated. He's received directives that he violated. He's had his license suspended by the OAH twice. The second hearing for that, he didn't even show up for. He didn't dispute those charges. So I'm kind of not surprised that he didn't show up here. The toll that this has taken on my family has been substantial. I mean, the loss of, money and memories and, everything, dealing with two teenage daughters in the middle of a house that, we've been living in for 2 years, it's still not fixed. It's still not finished. And we'll probably have to move out of it in order to get everything done. And so at this point, the damage he caused can't be undone. We know we're not the only people that this has happened to. And I don't even think that we've uncovered everything that he's done. But we're asking this board, not only in addition to your administrative penalties that you decide on, but to refer this case to the Attorney General's office, because there are serious criminal, violations of the law that have occurred here. And I really believe that that's the only thing that will stop him.
Do you want to add to that? I think
I'll just add briefly.
Okay.
So I spent 21 years in the FBI as a special agent, retired from that job to come out here and build my retirement home, as Jennifer mentioned. Just the facts that I'm familiar with in this case, I believe that they warrant criminal referral. I think the evidence is overwhelming just based on what I know. I know that many of you on this board hold technical certifications, and those are important in terms of representing a certain experience and level of expertise in your chosen fields. And I think when those are misrepresented, that facilitates fraud, which I think we've been victimized for. So for those reasons, in addition to the significant trouble that we have dealing with this home, we respectfully request that this board make a criminal referral to the Arizona Attorney General so that they can review the facts and make a prosecutorial rendering on what's been submitted by an investigator. Ryan.
let me start by saying I feel for your plight. It's just a horrible experience. Mr. Ream, can you add, Chair, a quick summary of staff position on this, please?
Well, I should probably address the criminal allegations initially, and some of the board members may not know. I've conducted literally hundreds of criminal investigations before I came here, so it's something that I have, some strength that I have. When I approached this case, there were a couple of felony crimes, class 4 felony offenses, one of which was investigated by the Scottsdale Police Department. The Scottsdale Police Department initially opened an investigation with respect to the forging of a deferred form on a wood truss issue that had the seal of Christopher Sinclair. And frankly, the investigation, having had the reports, was lacking in thoroughness, and it wasn't at all comprehensive. It was frankly closed. But Mr. Sinclair wasn't supportive of the police department referring the case for prosecution anyway. But the Scottsdale Police Department did not have a second document of a non-registrant by the name of Donna Winters. Donna Winters is a landscape designer and not a landscape architect that's done a lot of work with the respondent. And a document appeared before the Homeowners Association that was reviewed by a registered architect who's a consultant, who's also a registrant. And he identified the forged document in addition to Mr. LeBlanc creating his own steel with a phony number on it. But the issue with the Donna Winters had not been previously investigated. I did in the course of this investigation, and it's not just a prosecutable case, but it's one that has a high degree of strength in the sense that if it's referred to the Attorney General's office and somebody from their intake unit calls me, I will convey to them that this has a high degree of success in terms of going before a jury simply on the facts of the case. And that's just through the course of the investigation, I was able to uncover enough to support that element of it. So that is really the specific issue rather than issues, because the Sinclair issue had been previously addressed by Scottsdale Police Department, and it's not something that should move forward. However, with regard to Don Winters, it should, in my view, be referred for consideration for a class 4 criminal complaint in the court system now. There's some other issues going on as well. I've also made a recommendation because there's a registrant involved by the name of Mr. Goss who has reviewed some documents from Ms. Winters that was landscape architecture. However, Mr. Goss didn't complete them, yet he stamped them, accepted money for that. That's an issue with respect to Mr. Goss. Ms. Winters herself is also engaging in a board-regulated profession without registration. So there's a recommendation for that as well. So there's a number of things going on, and I might forget some of them. So I'm
thank you, Mr. Ream, for the summary. The investigation is really very thorough, so I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of discussion here. I want to open this up for the board for discussion. Any questions from the board on this issue?
Sure.
Mr. Noel.
One question would be, why did Mr. Sinclair not care that somebody used his signature?
Well, I wouldn't, and I did interview Mr. Sinclair, and I wouldn't say that that's how he felt. Essentially, what he conveyed is there's a relationship between the two, Mr. Sinclair and Mr. LeBlanc, and that seemed to sway his take on what had happened. So that's essentially why, in my view, that he didn't seem more supportive of a criminal complaint, and he certainly was not when I talked to him. And I think that's why, is that business relationship between the two.
I mean, I've been on the board a short time, and this is obviously the most egregious thing that I've seen. Do we know if he's still practicing?
His license has been pulled. I haven't had the chance to speak with Mr. LeBlanc. He declined through his attorney to be interviewed, so okay. I haven't had the chance to ask him anything.
Yeah, he's still building houses. He's still engaged in other lawsuits that he hasn't completed to fix houses. I mean, the last OAH ruling, when he didn't show up, he was kind of, found guilty by that administrative law judge. and his license was suspended for 5 days. Three of those were over holiday weekend. And so...
just to clarify, too, she's referring to Office of Administrative Hearings.
Yes. Yes, the Office of Administrative. Yeah,
I know we start throwing around things like that.
The
too.
Acronyms, yeah.
Make sure.
Yeah. Thank you. So I mean, he's received a slap on the wrist, kind of all the way through, and has, you know, pulling everybody off that he can.
Yeah.
But he continues to do it. He continues.
Mr. Galica, you're an architect on the board. Do you have an opinion here?
Well, I share that with my fellow board members. It's very disturbing to see a person, one, carry themselves as an architect when they're not, but to act in this level of fraudulent behavior, it is disturbing. And I would definitely support moving forward with whatever action that we can that's been outlined by staff at this point.
I do have a question for staff. There are 6 violations here, and there's a administrative penalty in amount, or a civil penalty in amount of $7,000. How was that figure generated?
That was just in reviewing the violations and the matrix, as well as there's also almost another $1,500 in cost of investigation.
Historically, we've been able to go up to $2,000 per violation. So I guess I'd want to see this thing hit to the max.
How high can we go, Scott? Do you know?
$2,000
per violation. Is there any wiggle room in anything else? How much was, the cost of investigation?
No, cost of investigation is strictly recouping, literally investigating.
So no punitive otherwise?
This is a non-registrant. The board is limited in what they're able to do with non-registrant.
Yeah, it's almost, I could see sending it to the AG, but it seemed like, for me anyways, I would consider holding off on our actions, send it to the AG, and see what they come up with.
We can do both.
I would do both.
You can do that actually. In one motion. You can.
Yeah. Historically,
is not going to be able to help them get any money back.
But this board can assess the civil penalty.
Can we do
legally
do a restitution?
Legally, these what the board does, and if there's a criminal referral, what the Attorney General's office would do are going to be independent.
Okay.
Meaning, if the AG's office does something, it does not preclude the board from acting, and vice versa.
So you can do the both, $2,000 each.
And that would be my recommendation at this point, is to hit this thing to the max of $2,000 per violation, plus the penalties, the administrative review cost.
Yeah.
Is that...
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Kalika. I would definitely make a motion to proceed accordingly with this action in terms of the maximum fine possible for the 6 counts totaling... I guess that would be $12,000 plus the cost of investigation and administrative fees associated with this, in addition to forwarding this matter to the Attorney General's office.
Very good. And there's also, and this may come afterwards, recommendation to start an investigation on Mr. Gauss?
Let's do that in a
separate motion.
So just to reiterate, Mr. Kulik is suggesting accepting the consent agreement as drafted with the one amendment of changing the civil penalties to $12,000, which is $2,000 per violation for the 6, and then also forwarding it for criminal
investigation.
Mr. Chair, I should also add, on page 4 of the consent agreement, when working with Mr. LeBlanc's attorney, a couple of changes were made to paragraph 7. I had indicated that his registration number was phony, and I was asked by counsel to change it to non-existent, and it was not a factual issue, so I did that. However, that's not in your copy. And then I added the last sentence, the non-existent registration number used by a respondent is actually a record number issued by NCARB. She just asked his attorney that I add to the respondent, and so I agreed to do that. So if the board doesn't have an issue with that, I would like to, because I've worked with counsel on that issue, I would like to maintain that unless the board's opposed to doing so.
Okay, do we need to modify our motion to accept Mr. Reams' revision?
No, I think it's currently in there. He's just asking if you want to change it.
Well, the consent agreement that you have in the packet doesn't reflect that language change.
Okay.
It happened afterwards.
So,
So we're asking the board to want to maintain that language that's currently out there in front of the respondent's attorney.
Okay.
I mean, I kind of like phony. What would you recommend?
Well, I'm not sure I could necessarily recommend one course of action or another. I can say, as an attorney, I would advise a client not to enter into a consent agreement that used the word phony, because that would open up a can of worms.
Okay. And it was just in the course of working with counsel to try and get to a signed consent agreement that I did that.
Yeah.
That's really all I was doing at that point. I was trying to see if we could get a signed consent agreement. That didn't happen. The counsel has indicated to me that Mr. Blunt has the document, but no decisions have been made. And of course, what happens here will change that, because I'll have to send the changes reflected by the board back to counsel, which I'll do today, depending on what the board decides.
Do you have any confidence that he'll sign it, even if it doesn't have phony and the other change?
I doubt it.
I think my only hesitation with regard to that is that some of the language in the consent agreement could potentially be viewed by counsel as an issue for criminal prosecution. And I think that that could be an issue, because I was asked by counsel to remove an entire paragraph, paragraph 8 on page 4, and that was an issue that frankly could be seen as something that would be difficult for him to overcome in the criminal prosecution proceeding.
I think the board needs to review the complete contract that he's referring to.
I mean, I'm inclined not to accept the changes by the respondent.
The exception is a phony.
So,
hi,
Mr. Kalika.
I agree with that as well.
Okay, so we'll go back to then our draft.
Yes. Yes, we have.
We'll clean the one word up or two, and increase the fee.
Okay, so I'm still lost. Are we going to accept
Mr.
Reams' version of the consent agreement and modify the fines?
The one that we have.
Is the first one.
The word phony in it.
Yes.
Yeah, we're going to remove that.
Well, so that's already been done.
Right, that's Mr. Reams' version.
But the attorney also wanted other things done, too. We may not agree to that.
Well, if you make the motion to accept as it's written, with the language that Mr. Reams just stated to you, and the only amendment is the civil penalty, then that's how it will be presented, with no further changes, regardless of what any attorney approaches him.
Yeah, let's be clear on this. Mr. Reams, can you discuss those changes again?
Okay.
Or just read it.
It's on page 4 of the consent agreement, and it's paragraph 7. It says, on an unknown date during the project, respondent submitted documents to True North Association in which he included a professional seal, including Thomas LeBlanc, registered architect, I previously had phony registration number of 802168. I changed that to non-existent at counsel's request. Then it continues, the professional seal specifically identified respondent as a registered architect despite lacking board registration. Then the last sentence, the non-existent registration, which I had previously indicated was phony, number issued by respondent is actually a record number issued by NCARB, and that was the end of the sentence, and counsel asked me to add to the respondent, which I did. Those are the only changes made at the request of counsel.
Okay.
And they're minor in nature.
Yeah.
Does that registration number represent anybody?
Actually, I contacted NCARB about the number because I was curious where exactly that six-digit number came from, because we only have 5 digits here at the board. And when I contacted NCARB, I specifically gave them that number, one of their managers, and he told me that number does exist. It's an NCARB number, but it's not a registration number. It is a record number, so that when someone is going through the course of taking exams, which is what happened in this case, because Mr. LeBlanc did take a couple of exams, that number is created, and as a result of that, respondent used that number as a registration or certification number, which it is not, and NCARB made that clear to me.
And as we're throwing out acronyms again, let's just state for the record that NCARB is the National Council of Architectural Registration Boards.
I forgot that part.
Mike, look, I just wanted to point out that, yes, certificate numbers are 5 digits, and then record numbers are potentially 5 or 6 digits, depending on how old the record is. So if they're saying a certificate number is 6 digits, that does not exist. So yeah, it sounds like they're using their record number, which either way, it's not appropriate to use either of those.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Ream. I think we need to accept Mr. Ream's version of this consent agreement and modify the administrative penalty to the civil penalty to $12,000. All the other elements of the consent agreement remain the same.
Is the cost of investigation complete? Is that going to cover it completely, nearly $1,500?
Once we total the cost of investigation, it goes into consent agreement. There are additional elements associated with the case. However, we don't include that. Once that number's total, then that's kind of where we ended at that point.
Okay. Probably unless the respondent refused to sign and it went to administrative hearings, then it would be revised at that point.
Yes. Yeah, then the costs would be through the entire hearing process.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think, Mr. Kalika, could you start your motion over again? I think it was close, but I want to make sure it's clear that we're accepting Mr. Ream's version of the consent agreement with modification.
Sure. Let me try to recap that as best I can. So I'll make a revised motion to accept Mr. Ream's modified consent agreement as noted, along with the maximum penalty of $2,000 per violation. At six violations is $12,000. Plus the appropriate cost for investigation and administrative fees.
And referral to the Attorney General's office for prosecution.
And referring this to the Attorney General's office for prosecution.
Thank you. That's our motion.
Do we have to say what the prosecution is or what we're saying the prosecution
is? No, just a referral to the criminal division.
If I may, a follow-up question. Why aren't we saying that he cannot be registered? I mean,
no,
he's not registered. He's pretending he is. At some point, he might want to become registered. I think what he's done here, we should say, forget it.
Well, I don't know if we can do that, but this will follow him when he applies to the board. So we can.
He has a record now.
Yes, sir. I don't know that necessarily even qualifies if he wanted to seek registration.
Right.
Yeah.
Second.
So we have a motion. We need a second.
A second.
Thank you, Jennifer. We have a motion to modify the consent agreement to increase the civil penalty, accept the cost of investigation, and then to refer this to the Attorney General's office for prosecution. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Kalika?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, thank you. We have a unanimous vote. Again, I'm sorry for your plight, and I got to let you know this is an exception to the rule. This doesn't happen really very often. So I'm sorry, but
sounds like it's happening.
And also,
there will be a second.
Potentially two more cases that if you direct staff.
I know one more case for Mr. Goss.
And one for Ms. Winters.
We're going to open up.
Two cases.
But I guess I'm curious about the second one.
Well,
we definitely have a case that. For staff to start investigation on Mr. Goss for aiding and abetting.
And that was aiding and abetting Ms. Winters, who was preparing landscape architecture documents that were sealed by Mr. Goss, which essentially allowed her to conduct that type of practice without board registration.
As I read the review, though, she was not aware that that stamp was put on her plans?
She wasn't aware of the forged seal of that one particular document. However, there are other documents related to this project that involved her logo and company information, Mr. Goss's seal, which would suggest that she, again, was because of what Mr. Goss said, that she prepared those documents after which he did seal them. So based on those statements, there's sufficient cause to open investigations, in my view, for both of them.
Okay.
Can
All right.
Also add Mr. St. Clair, if he's allowing someone to use his license? Even if it's his buddy. he seems like he's somehow tied into this.
Aiding and abetting to some degree?
I didn't see any evidence of that whatsoever. Frankly, he seemed to be taken by surprise that this had happened. He had worked with Mr. LeBlanc over a number of years, thought that Mr. LeBlanc had taken this seal off a previous trust deferred form from a previous project and used it, but there wasn't anything that would suggest that he was working at all with and was more or less taken by surprise by it. So there isn't anything with regard to Mr. Sinclair that would suggest anything further needs to be done, in my view.
Okay.
So we give a recommendation. Let's take a motion. I don't think this takes a motion, does it? We're asking staff to start investigations on Mr. Goss and Ms. Winters. Okay. Does this take a vote?
Just on the safe side. Normally it wouldn't, but under the circumstances, maybe.
Okay, based on the complexities here, let's make a motion. Yeah. Is there a motion to start investigation?
Yeah, I'll make a motion to start the investigation.
I'll second.
We have a motion, a first and a second. All those in favor of starting investigations on Mr. Goss and Ms. Winters, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Kalika?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you, folks. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Would you kind of explain a little bit the process now going through the Attorney General's office? I mean, what might happen, what we expect to happen, the timing?
I couldn't say it's a different division. I'm honestly not sure of the timing.
But they would notify us, I presume.
Kurt would probably have to try to keep in contact with them, but they would proceed independently of the board's decision.
And can they blow it off?
Yes.
Well, any agency could.
I
want
to use a little more technical term than phone. Yeah.
Okay, I think we're ready to move on to 6D2. We have no one present, Kurt. I don't see anybody on the list.
I don't have anybody for the 60s on my call in.
There is a discussion item, I think, here. I'm going to just open this up. This is case number HI-22-007. It involves Mr. Jason Stack, a non-registrant. The synopsis of the complaint: on September the 24th, 2021, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent provided a fee, paid home inspection, and inspection report at 1760 North Leanna Drive in Chino Valley, Arizona. On or about June of 2021, without registration as home inspector. Mr. Kramer is not here.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you. I think your investigation is really very complete. I was concerned that the civil penalty is kind of low, especially with this guy not even communicating with staff.
Well, I certainly would be amenable to increasing it.
Have you had any subsequent communication with this guy since this thing was put on the agenda?
It was on the agenda last month, but Mr. Stack called the day before and said that he had just received the consent agreement and had a chance to look over it. So that's why we pushed it to this month. But since then, I have not heard anything from him.
Have you guys reached out to him at all anymore since then?
Yes, we got no answer.
Okay. I think it's unfortunate these guys don't at least want to clear their case for their own benefit. That surprises me. Civil penalty amount of $500 is okay, but I think we need to get this guy's attention, and I think we need to kick that up another at least $500, and I just want to get the opinion of the board.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. At the least, it seems that the mere fact that he hasn't responded is troubling. And to the degree that we can prevent him from doing it again on a one-off would be.
Yeah, this guy did the report as a favor to a friend, but he did charge $600 for it, and it is controlled. So I think the fact that he's unresponsive leads me to believe we need to get his attention. So I'd like to see this thing get kicked up to at least $1,000. Cost of mitigation can remain the same, and offer the proposed consent agreement with the 30-day requirement, and then we proceed to hearing for him to respond. Then we proceed to hearing. If that's acceptable to the board, I'd like to entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to increase the civil penalty to $1,000.
Okay. And other elements of the proposed consent agreement can remain the same, though. Is there a second?
Dr. Campbell will second.
Thank you. All those in favor of revising this offer for a consent agreement, please say aye.
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 Aye. Anybody opposed? Mr. Kalika?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Thank you. We have a unanimous vote, Kurt. Okay, item 6D3. This is another home inspection non-registrant. This is case number HI21-031. The synopsis of this complaint. On May 20th, 2021, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent, while conducting home inspection at 2429 DeShepi Trail in Flagstaff, Arizona, on or about October the 7th, 2020, failed to observe and report on an active water leak in a home in violation of standards of professional practice for the Arizona Home Inspectors. It is also alleged that respondent firm was practicing or offering to practice a board-regulated profession without firm registration with the Arizona Board of Technical Registration. Mr. Kramer, any discussion on this?
I've sent a notice through certified mail about the consent agreement and the meeting today. I've got no response. Last time I checked a week or so ago, the certified mail was sitting in an attempt to deliver, and the post office was not having any success with that.
Okay, this is kind of a reflection of what we just went through on 62. Discussion by the board. I think, again, we need to get this guy's attention. He's had the offer since November 22nd, and he's not responded to calls or emails, I presume?
Correct.
Or certified mail. Let's take this one up again. I think this needs to go up to at least 2,000 and see if he will respond. If not, we go to hearing in 30 days. Any discussion on the board? If not, then I'd like to make a motion then that we offer this consent agreement as is, but we increase the administrative penalty to $2,000. Cost of investigation remaining at $800, and if not signed within 30 days, we proceed to hearing. Can I get a second?
Second.
We have a second. Thank you, Clarence. All those in favor of amending this consent agreement, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Kalika?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Thank you. Kurt, we have a unanimous vote. Okay, 6E1. I think we have the ledger online. Jennifer Parker?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. Okay, this is case number P22-008. involves Mr. Mark Thomas. How do you say that?
Tomachek.
Tomachek, architect. The synopsis of this complaint. On August the 4th, 2021, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent, after contracting on or about June 2nd, 2020, and being paid $18,000 to prepare a completed set of professional design documents for the Parker residence at 2001 North Ledgestone Lane in Flagstaff. He failed to deliver a plan set as agreed upon with the client and abandoned the client's project. It is further alleged that respondent and respondent firm engaged in the practice of architecture without firm registration with the board. Board records show no indication that the respondent firm has ever been registered with the board. Okay, Mr. Since we have the ledger, Ms. Parker, do you want to share a summary with the board on your position?
Yeah, I mean, Mark Tomachek is our neighbor. He lives a few doors down from us. We've known him for years, known him to be an architect. We purchased online plans for a house in Flagstaff and showed them to him and asked him to make minor modifications. He provided us with a quote for engineering, and there was a number of back and forth where he made minor modifications and things and took money for engineering and told us that he paid the engineering in full and then failed to deliver a product that we were happy with. He I guess sent it to final engineering with a back patio wall that just did not work. And when we asked him to change it, he told us it would be expensive and that his people were busy and it would be thousands of dollars to change it. And we kind of said, well, why is that our responsibility? And it got increasingly contentious with him, where he quit and would not finish the job and then said, sorry, we've already paid for the engineering in full. You should be able to use it. We were unable to use anything that he provided. He never did provide the mechanical, electrical, plumbing that we paid in full for. He just never sent it. All we got were legal letters saying that if you sue me, because we told him that we were going to try to collect back our money because we had to pay, I mean, we had to start from scratch. And he sent attorney's letters basically saying, if you sue me, I will countersue you with what our attorney kind of described as bad sportsmanship, like he doesn't, you know, that we were not being kind to him for hundreds of thousands of dollars and we better watch our step. And it just got to a point where we didn't know quite what to do, but we were pretty certain that this is not how a registered architect should behave with really anybody, much less a friend, neighbor, or customer. And we're just out that money, I guess.
Okay, I'm sorry for your situation. Mr. Cartel, could you share with the board kind of a summary? I'm surprised to hear, because I read in here that plans were shared for HVAC, electrical, but calculations were not shared with outhouse. What was actually generated for her benefit versus what was not ever delivered?
This case got rather complicated,
yeah.
To say the least. And just as a disclaimer, much of this was well over my head, but I had no experience with architecture, so I relied very heavily on the AC. So they did purchase plans from an online place. I believe it's based out of Washington. We looked it up and whatnot. The online plans were designed for a flat surface. And respondent was asked to make modifications to make it work on a sloped surface for their lot in Flagstaff. From what I understand, Mr. Tomachek did do that, made the modifications for that, and then went through collaborative engineers and whatnot to complete the work that was completed. However, there were some modifications that the alleges had requested after that. According to Mr. Tomachek, he complied with some of those, but they got to the point where, in his own words, they were going beyond the scope of his work, and that the interaction had become adversarial. Depending on which side you listen to, the source of the adversarial would differ from one side to the other, depending on who you spoke with. I did set it up for assessments. Both assessments came back with concerns about the contract being vague and saying that there's a possibility that the difference in expectations was based on a vague contract. I did confirm with all the collaborative engineers and draftsmen that the money did go where he said it did. They had received all of their payment per the proposal that was set forth, so I don't have any evidence that he did something fishy with the money. We did go to EAC because there was just so much involved in this. The outcome of the EAC meeting was that his work was up to par. During the meeting, he did have a copy of his work next to a copy of what was generated by Outhouse. And going from page to page with the architects on the committee, they were essentially identical, except for the title head being Outhouse instead of Tomachak Design.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but that is inaccurate and maybe was fixed after the fact, because there are pages and pages of information from Outhouse stating that he did not slope the roof correctly and the roof line was crooked, and there were a number of problems that Outhouse brought to Mark, and maybe he fixed them after the fact, but he did not provide a set of plans that was usable by Outhouse.
Okay, so just for my own clarification, the plans that were ultimately completed by Outhouse, they did use the prior HVAC electrical stuff prepared by Mr. Tomachak?
No.
The previous consultants?
There were some engineering that was done separately. Outhouse did have some engineers do some work for them.
We did all the engineering.
Yeah, hold on please, Ms. Parker. We're going to let Mr. Cartel finish.
Okay.
The argument back and forth was that the extra engineering was for the modifications that they had requested after he had completed his part. The conclusion of the EAC was that the work was up to standard, but the contract was not, and that the contract failed to list a clear scope of work, which led to the expectations that were different from one side to the other. And they had recommended that there be a letter of concern written in regards to the big contract and the less than par communication. But they did, and again, this is way over my head, so I was relying very heavily on EAC members.
Okay.
So I'm taking their word for it,
sure,
that the work was up to par and that there was usable work identified in both his and Outhouse's versions.
So it's a scope issue and interpretation between the client and Ms. Parker. Hold on, Ms. Parker. I want to open this up for discussion with board members, please.
Chair.
Mr. Noel.
Was any of this ever submitted to the city of Flagstaff for their review?
He was, according to Mr. Tomachak, he was in communication with them, but it didn't go for a formal review. The relationship had parted before it got to that point.
Mr. Tomachak told us that he had never spoken with the city of Flagstaff.
Okay, thank you. Any other board members want to add to this? Mr. Kalika, do you have an opinion?
I support that of the members of the EAC, but also agree that the contract elements were inappropriate.
Yeah. Ms. Parker, do you understand how the EAC committee works?
Is that the meeting that we attended where, yes.
It was a peer review of other architects who determined that the work done by Mr. Tomachak was actually pretty thorough. Revisions were made, but for the most part, the plans were identical except for some of the consulting services. So the EAC...
I think our main concern was that there was a back wall to our patio that was, like, there was no back patio and a very tall, like, 4-foot wall. And we had been in clear communications with Mr. Tomachek from the minute that we provided these plans that the back wall of the patio was the major issue in developing this house. He never, ever gave us any reason to believe that the back wall would be any higher than 2 to 3 feet tall. And it came back over 4, 4.5. And when we expressed that that was not, I mean, the plans of the actual house, yes, they will be identical in that, like, that, they'll be identical to what we purchased online. He didn't create that house. But the way that it was positioned on the sloped lot was our main problem, and he never indicated that that was going to be anything other than a mild challenge. And he then spent all the money on the engineering to develop that house on the lot where the back wall was high. And when we told him that didn't work, that's when things went south and he quit. And I think he didn't know how to fix it. We were ultimately able to get the house resituated on the lot, but that was part of his scope of work, that was what he was supposed to do. And there are dozens and dozens of emails about this wall back from the minute we started this project, and emails from Mr. Tomachek confirming that they didn't change and it would be fine. So what he proceeded with, like, maybe the house is fine, but the way that it was situated was not, and he was very aware from the moment that he took the job that that was a very important part of the project. And us not having any knowledge of working on a sloped lot or challenges that engineering might face, we relied on him to communicate with us if there were challenges, and he did not do that.
Ms. Parker, as I read through the literature supporting this, there was an indication from a civil engineer that part of the reasoning for that wall was for flood control and drainage. So that's beyond, irregardless of what the architect wants, that's something that his consultant imposed. But this board's not going to judge whether that was a good or bad solution. We can only judge the performance of the architect in this case. And it sounds like there were some poor contractual scoping items, but this has been unsubstantiated by the EAC committee members in terms of the quality of his work. So without anything else at this point, we really don't have much else to go on except to accept EAC's recommendation and to accept Mr. Tomachek's signed consent agreement. I appreciate your frustration, but it really comes down to the fact there was poor communication between you and your architect, but his performance does meet the standard of practice for the state of Arizona.
So what does the signed consent agreement say?
There is a there's a an order in a consent agreement that says the board will issue a letter of reprimand, and that will probably review the importance of clarifying his scope of services and making sure he does his programming with you appropriately.
Yes, sir. I hate to interrupt.
Sure.
I apologize. To be clear, the consent agreement is solely based on the firm registration issue. The letter of concern addresses the issue of the contract communication.
Yeah, and that's the letter of reprimand. This says we're issuing a letter of reprimand in a consent agreement.
I separated the consent agreement with letter of concern. So letter of
okay.
reprimand would be the
got
consent
it, got
agreement.
It. All right, I missed that. So there is.
So, sorry, he's not a registered architect?
Yes, he is.
Okay.
There is an administrative penalty in the amount of $1,050, and there is a cost of investigation in the amount of $83. And that is the limit of the consent agreement. There's a letter of reprimand regarding the necessity for him to get his firm registered. Is that it?
Okay.
I missed the last thing you said, sir. I'm sorry.
There was a problem with his registration, a firm registration.
Yes, sir.
So he's getting cited for that, and then we will be issuing a letter of concern regarding the importance of his communication and the scope of his agreements with his clients.
Okay.
Okay.
So we have a signed consent agreement in place. Any other discussion by the board? Okay. Is there a motion then to accept the signed consent agreement?
And Mr. Chair, would that motion also encompass issuing a letter of concern with regards to the individual?
Yes, it would. Thank you. So the motion will be to accept the signed consent agreement and to issue a letter of concern to Mr. Tomczak regarding the importance of his communication and scope of his agreements with his clients. So can I get a motion
so
to that effect?
Chair.
Second?
I'll take that.
Motion?
So moved, as you explained it.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Thank you.
Did you
motion and then second by Mr. Hack.
I thought I heard Kent, too, so I was like, wait, what? Okay, sorry.
All those in favor of supporting the motion, please say aye.
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 Okay, I want to go through Mr. Kalika.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Campbell.
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren.
Aye.
Okay. Ms. Parker, thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
Good luck with your project.
Thank you.
Okay. Are we good? Do we need a break? Should we take a break after the next one?
Here's the next one.
Okay, let's move on to item 6F1.
Definitely after this one.
Yeah. this is related to case numbers P21072, P22028, and P22029. This is coming back to the board as a result of last month's discussion on these two previous cases involving respondent Monica Acuna Arizamendi. I hope I said that correctly. The synopsis of this complaint: on November the 2nd, 2021, the board directed staff to initiate an investigation of two registrants, Mr. Reed Dalbick, registered land surveyor, and he's a PE, and then William Perez, also a registered land surveyor. Board staff recommended that this course of action take place as during the investigation of non-registrant Monica Acuna Arizamendi, which was case number P21072, several violations of the Board's Practice Act by both registrants surfaced during the course of the investigation with Mr. Perez, case P22-029. Evidence surfaced that Ms. Acuna Arizamendi was engaging in land survey work without board registration. Yikes, we had quite a discussion on this. Mr. Ream, can you share a quick summary with the board as to why this came back?
Well, the investigation of Mr. Perez, in addition to Mr. Dalbeck, but with respect to Mr. Perez, during the course of the investigation with him, I asked him to send me information about the case between what was happening between the two of them. He did that. So I received some professional documents, some email messages, and that kind of thing that established that as previously took place, or actually later on, with Mr. Dalbeck, Ms. Arizamendi was working directly with Mr. Perez to do land survey work, after which documents would be forwarded to Mr. Perez, who either redlined or approved and then affixed his stamp. That's information that I didn't previously have in the previous case, because it was specific to what was going on between Ms. Arizamendi and Mr. Dalbeck. So during the course of my investigation with Mr. Perez, I get this information and evidence that Ms. Arizamendi was also doing a board-related practice without board registration, specifically with Mr. Perez. And at no point in time did I know that, nor did the board, and as such, it's not been resolved as such. So that's why it's before you today.
We had a previous case involving Ms. Arizamendi, case P21072. What was the outcome of that? I didn't see the results in this discussion.
It resulted in a criminal referral and a civil penalty of $10,000 and the cost of investigation, which was approximately $3,400.
So the question before the board today is, her activity prior to working with Mr. Perez was also in question, and she was practicing a board registered or controlled service without board registration. So the question I think for the board, do we go back prior to P21072, which she's already been cited on and referred to the for criminal investigation, do we start another investigation? I don't know that there's a whole lot of benefit here.
Well, I think that the point that I would want to make to the board is, initially, we get a complaint from a registrant against Monica Arizmendi about her forging and that kind of thing, his seal and that kind of thing. So during the course of that investigation, I received information that the complainant, Mr. Dahlbeck, as well as Mr. Perez, violated the Board's Practice Act. So I bring that before the board. The board orders an investigation of those two. Well, now I conduct those two investigations, and the same thing happens in this case, that in the course of investigation of Mr. Perez, I get information that I didn't previously have, never had, that Ms. Arizmendi was in violation of the Board's Practice Act. So for me, if we're going to open cases on two registrants because of that kind of thing, then I would think, in a sense of fairness, why would we just simply summarily dismiss Board Practice Act violations without dealing with it? So that's why it's before you.
When this gets referred to the for criminal investigation, will they be looking into prior conduct like that? Or is this they relying on us to do that for them?
Well, the criminal referral was specific to the forgery allegations and didn't have anything to do with unrelated issues.
Okay.
So I can't imagine the Attorney General's office having any interest beyond that part of the criminal case in and of itself.
Okay. Board, want to discuss this?
Yeah, I thought in the case that I recall, of course, I guess that was a few months ago, that survey and engineering was involved. You know, we knew it, but we really didn't have it nailed down as to who.
And how long
and stuff, yeah. Now, this right now, what she did was the elevation certificates, and engineers, civil engineers and surveyors can perform it. It's a document that either allows you to get flood insurance or to get out of flood insurance. That's virtually the only purpose for it. It's not as serious as the other stuff, but still, I thought it was covered in the, you know, the $10,000, and that's where I would leave it.
But we're learning now that it was not covered, and her.
Well, there was statements in there that survey and engineering was involved.
Dealing with those
in the $10,000,
and that was because Mr. Dahlbeck was both a registered land surveyor and a civil engineer, so. The two of them were able to do both elements, but that was just specific to the two of them. I had no idea that prior to her working with Mr. Dahlbeck, that she was doing essentially the same thing, plant survey work, yeah, with Mr.
Well,
Perez.
It's kind of like molded into one little act between all these different players. And what we did with the $10,000 and the $3,000, I thought, covered it. When the engineer came forward, he actually described something which is very common in an engineering firm, surveying firm, where you review the people. If I had known that ahead of time, I probably would have reduced the amount.
Hmm.
But
Mr. Reeb, this relationship with Mr. Perez started, I think, in 2017, plus or minus. So what we need to investigate is how long this has been going on prior to, and can the board do that kind of research to determine how many years has this been going on?
Well, frankly, the evidence and the documents exist already, so it's not a matter if the case is assigned to me, it wouldn't take me long to investigate the matter and bring it before the board. It wouldn't take long at all. The evidence is already there. It's surface. It just
but because it's already presented to the board, but I think it's a little late to continue.
This information that Mr. Reeb is suggesting be investigated has not been brought before the board. That's why we're here because based on new information that has
I would swear it was listed in the original document where the first complaint was filed for the 10,000, 3,000. There was stuff that was listed in there by all the players, and I figured, okay, this is just, we're combining it into one, and that's it. It's kind of like a whole bunch of stuff that was going on, and it wasn't determined exactly. There was no documents of any of the survey work or engineering work that was done. You know, that should be part of the investigation. We should be able to see that, those documents. That was not included. So it's not a complete to begin with.
Well, at least
it just seems like we just combined everything that she did.
What's included in any investigation is what the investigator has at that time. If some new information comes up or new violations or things like that, then it comes back to the board.
You know, that's my point. It's almost like double jeopardy.
I feel like you're confusing
issues. Keep tacking stuff on, it's got to stop.
Well, we're getting new information that we didn't have before. I guess I don't understand.
Well, I understood from the beginning she was doing engineering and surveying, and I thought that's exactly what.
But we don't know for how long and to what level. So I think if he's got the information already available, I don't see the harm in at least doing this initial investigation, letting it come back, and let the board make a decision at that time.
I think we covered the engineer and the surveyor and this Monica and the critical thing now is the AG getting her the forgery and stuff. I don't think we should pursue anymore, but that's my opinion.
Okay. Does this take a motion?
Under the circumstances, probably.
Yeah, at this point, I don't see the harm necessarily of looking back into prior activity before Mr. Paris. So that's really what we're looking at.
I understand that, but, you know, how long are you going to continue bringing, we got something new this month, You know, you got to put a stop to it. The main thing is the forgery. That's what has to be addressed now. We've already addressed the issues. We don't need to drag this on until eternity.
I don't think that's the intent here. And we don't have an unusual situation, I would say, because we don't normally go back and ask staff to dig up old history on these cases. But in this case, we've learned that there is questionable prior activity that I think we should be aware of and let staff at least investigate it. Yeah, we're not going to decide on it today, but at least we can get the research done and let staff come back, and then we can decide how we want to proceed.
If you want to pursue it, you're going to be looking for the documents that were done.
And Mr. Reeves says that information is readily available. So I'd like to make a motion that we accept staff recommendation and at least proceed with investigation, let it come back before the board at a future hearing.
A second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed?
Nay.
Mr. Kalika?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren? Ms. Lindgren?
Oh, pardon me. Nay.
Okay. We have two no votes and seven in favor, so the motion will pass. Staff, please proceed. Thank you. Let's take a 10-minute break, plus or minus.
Is your Verizon
going? For 11 o'clock. Thank you. Kurt, let's adjourn for 10 minutes.
I'm going to mute the phone during this break period.
Sounds good. Thanks, Kurt.
We are now recording.
Okay, thank you, Kurt. The board is back in session. We are moving on to licensing matters, and I think this is a great intro for our honored guest from NCES.
Well, you know what?
Do you want to start?
So Mr. Bishop has said we're okay to get through our licensing.
First? Oh.
Yeah. So,
thank you.
I'm here. I'm just here.
You're a fixture today.
I'm saying Mr. Bishop because this is Scott Bishop, and we have our attorney Scott Donald, so just so we know which Scott we're talking about.
All right, I'm going to turn this in over to Julie. Could you start with the eight items, please? Item eight.
Sure, and I don't know if the board would like to, Mr. Schultz is in the room. For item cool. 8C5.
So start with Mr. Yeah.
8C5.
Mr. Schwartz, please come forward and identify yourself, please.
Hi, I'm Ben Schwartz. Thank you for considering my application.
Very good.
So Mr. Schwartz is applying for a control systems engineer, and his application is before the board because his certificates of experience are not made by a registrant. So for the board to review and to vote to accept.
Mr. Schwartz, can you just give us a quick summary of your resume and where you, what you've been up to these last, leading to this interest to get registered in Arizona?
Oh, yeah, sure. I've worked in controls as it pertains to flow rate in lung ventilators, and then as well as instrumentation for measuring, looking into increasing the number of mechanical parameters by which objects are characterized for instrumentation purposes, and a lot of mathematic modeling. Experimental design and testing.
So, can I ask a question? Since you said you're working on ventilators, immediately, do you not all think, "Wow, you must have been really busy these last few years?"
It was pretty intense. There's a lot of calls for advice, my boss. They designed something they called a Vermontilator, because it's from Vermont, and it was a ventilator from Vermontilator. This was in the early months of the pandemic. Yeah. And so I'm applying for a license because I think all engineers should be licensed, frankly. It's kind of funny to me that not as many do as there are who call themselves engineer. That's basically me.
So what type of engineer are we talking about?
Control system.
And what type of engineering is that?
Thinking of, sometimes it's called instrumentation engineering or automation engineering. It's a pretty broad field. It has relevance in mechanics and electromagnetics.
Do we have a branch for that? Are there many people that do that?
It's not a hugely populated thing. not very many people in controls, which is. It's just strange. I think that is going to be changing as more and more of the modern world becomes automated.
Is it required for your type of work?
Apparently not, right? Well, going forward, I don't know what is on the horizon, and so I figured it's a sensible thing to apply for the credentials which I'm qualified, should I need it. I've heard of people throughout just this little bit that I was here, people doing work when they weren't licensed, but they should have been, and so.
Yeah.
It does really depend on what you're doing. I mean, there's more engineers in the state that don't have a professional engineering status than do, but
yeah.
The things that require it. And so it's great to have it in your pocket.
Yeah. So, but you work for universities typically, or is that mm-hmm.
I worked in, thus far, in research groups. I work for them designing the testing.
Do you have a PhD?
I do.
I was going to say, you should be a doctor.
So like it.
He is.
But it's, you know, it's not, you know, life is a funny, has a funny way of changing plans. Long ago, I think I might have been a doctor.
So this is interesting because a lot of professors, PhD professors, they can civil and geology and things, they don't think they need to be registered. And here's a guy that thinks...
I completely disagree. I think all engineering professors should be registered.
Yeah.
Nationwide. In fact, there are some universities it don't even bother applying to be a professor there. If you don't got if you're not a PE, I think that's sensible.
But I think in this case here, without the references being registrants, I mean, do you know any that would know your work to be able to sign off?
My references, while they didn't pursue formal licensure, are all highly complicated, competent engineers.
And it sounds complicated.
Yeah, you know.
Well, certainly your credentials are very good, and you've got glowing reviews. Joe, I don't see any question here.
I have a question. I'm an electrical engineer. Typically, controls is under electrical engineering.
Yeah. It was born, my understanding is the controls, it is very, very much linked to electrical.
Mm-hmm.
But originally, from my understanding of history, it was born actually out of mechanics. Out of mechanical engineering for before so many systems became electrified, the need for automation was apparent throughout factories. The systems of the controllers, the actual controller devices, were connected pneumatically. I find that pretty fascinating, actually. And some of the old buildings, the plants that control the heating and cooling throughout are still controlled pneumatically.
So you have a degree in biomedical engineering?
It's in bioengineering.
Bioengineering.
Controls engineering, biocontrols.
Okay. So... which exam, I'm assuming he's asking for to take an exam, right? Which exam would apply?
Oh, no.
No.
I took the test.
Oh, you took the test?
The control.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. There's a control test. Okay, so that would be under electrical. The electrical make controls.
It's its own
separate.
Test.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I took it. I passed it.
Okay, so now is the issue of the references that have to be in PEs.
Yeah.
Right. So would the industrial exemption apply to you? I'm curious.
I don't know what that is.
I don't know. What do you mean?
This is a statute for industrial exemptions based on what you're doing. If you're exempt from our humanity or professional, is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, like if you work for a manufacturer, equipment manufacturer, right? You never work, they, you know, usually Honeywell or Boeing, they manufacture equipment. So you don't need to be a PE.
Right, okay.
Right, well, in that case.
Maybe, but since he may be working.
Anywhere.
Well,
that would be true.
But
he
applies
to the
ones.
I mean,
well, no, yeah, I understand, but you don't need to get a reference that's a PE, is what I'm saying, in that case.
Well, applies. The reference would still apply, just that I see that he's got the qualifications.
Yeah.
He just didn't have the PE.
Right.
as for a certificate of experience, And board members, it's entirely up to you if you want to motion on this individually or if you don't have any other issues with items 8C, 1 through 6 that are all the same thing.
I would do that.
Certificates of experience.
I would move to grant 8C, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6.
1 second.
Okay, we have a motion to accept the certificates of experience for items 6 or 8C1
through
8C6. We have a motion. Is there a second?
Jennifer.
Jennifer, second. Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Mr. Kopek?
Aye.
Mr. Kalika, I'm sorry. Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Ben, thank you for coming in. That was a treat to speak with you and find out more about controlling systems.
Oh, yeah, controls is great. It's been my pleasure, and I thank you for letting me be here.
So, Mr. Schwartz, how was that article you were reading today?
Oh, anyways, I was going through a few.
Not that we're boring, right?
No.
Right.
And Pat, just have to say, Miss Bradford is also online, but you had just voted on her. I just wanted to let her know that that you guys had voted on her matter.
Okay. Miss Bradford, are you online still?
Yes, I'm here.
And we've accepted your certificate of experience. Congratulations. Anything you want to share with the board?
Just thank you so much. And I appreciate being here as well.
All right. Thank you. Okay.
Hey,
yes.
Thank you. I just wanted to let you know that I have, I'm now on.
So. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
And she had emailed me 11:10 is the time.
Okay, 8D1, council record.
Let's start at 8A.
And I do have one more call in the licensing. Jungwo Choi.
Oh.
Actually, Mr. Antonio for 8A1 is on the line. At least they called in case there are any questions, but...
They're all like that, right? In case. Yeah, I would move to accept or grant 8A1 through 4.
Okay, we have a motion to accept 8A1 through 4. Is there a second?
I'll second.
This is Mike.
Okay.
Okay, we have a second here already. All those in favor accepting... application for registration 8A1 through 4, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Kalika?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Thank you. That's unanimous.
Ms. Skanky is now.
Oh, Ms. Skanky, I'm sorry.
Yeah, aye. I'm not.
Thank you. That's unanimous. Okay, we go to 8B.
I would move to grant 8B1 through 5, or excuse me, 7.
Okay, and Kurt, these guys are online just in case we have questions.
1 second.
I don't think they're online, but some of them are available to be called.
Okay.
These are two just waive exams, not registration.
Yeah.
Okay, we have a motion to accept exam waivers for item 8B1 through B7. All those, is there a second? We got a second?
I thought there was.
Dr. Campbell can second that. Yeah.
Thank you. All those in favor of waiving these exams for items 8B1 through 7, please say aye.
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 Okay, Mr. Kalika?
Aye.
Ms. Danke?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Great. We have a unanimous vote, Kurt. Thank you. Okay. We did 8C already. Now we go on to Council 8D, Council Record. Julie?
Enough experience and education for registration. However, only 3.7 years shows under a licensed engineer, so it's similar to the COEs where you would just vote to accept the council record.
So, but so other than education works, it's just the experience under another registry, okay.
Yes.
Any discussion? Clarence, you look at this?
What are we talking about here?
Item 8D1. He's applying for registration as an electrical engineer. He's currently registered in three other states.
Oh, okay.
3.7 out of what, 4?
Yeah.
He's got exams in Michigan, Kentucky, and Utah. He's registered there?
Yeah, that's the way I read this. He's passed the FE and the PE.
Total engineer experience 6 years.
Yes.
Yeah, but 3.7 is under a registrant.
I don't see why not.
Okay, we agree.
I move to accept 8D1.
So that's a recommendation to accept the application registration.
Yeah.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor of accepting the council record and registration as electrical engineer, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay, Mr. Kalika?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Ms. Tanky?
Aye.
Thank you. That's a unanimous vote. Okay. 8E.
If you didn't hear, Mr. Choi, that the board has voted on your matter.
Mr. Choi, are you on? Okay, we're good. Okay, this is item 8E1. 1A and 1B, yeah.
Mr. Scott is on the phone as well, but this one has its own line item because it's a waiver of exam as well as a DUI from 2008.
Yeah, that was 2008. Okay. Any question by the board on this one?
I do, Chair. The waiver of the exam, I think I ask this question every month. It's on structural. What are we waiving? I mean, he's already taking exams, apparently.
So we're waiving the specific 16-hour structural exam. He has taken the civil exam and the Western States structural exam.
Well, he's got the California license structural 16 hours?
No, he hasn't taken the 16-hour structural.
He did the SE2.
So it's one or the other? Either or?
Yeah, SE1 is kind of like a fundamental, and it it's the SE2 that when you pass that, they consider you the structural engineer.
Well, we're waiving, he asked for a waiver?
Yeah, I think it's the SE1.
For this individual, he's taking the civil, civil and the Western States structural exam.
Neither first or second part of
and
the
is,
council.
Yeah. And he is a structural engineer in California since.
Right, he's already a structural engineer. I would waive.
Okay, we have a motion to waive the SE exam for Mr. Stewart.
And that's our specific.
For Mr. Scott.
Exam, right? That's Arizona. So is that specific for Arizona, what we're waiving?
No, it's the national.
It's the national structural exam through NCWS.
And his Western exam is through
that's
who?
Through California.
California does. I don't think California does national.
Isn't it?
Does
Julie? Western states.
Some of the states on this Western side
some of
that
them accept that
for the structural.
Arizona doesn't.
Why not?
What's up with that?
Why not? I don't know. There's other things out there too that we don't have listed. You know, the Washington Accord.
Is that exam essentially the same? Or similar? Very similar too?
I would say at least similar.
Hello, my name is Stuart Scott. The structural exam in question is a 16-hour exam that was taken back in, 1993? I'm not sure what the difference between the Western states and the other national structural exam is. I think it's a code of ethics things or something like that, but no, that's absolutely earthquake and, it's a full 16-hour exam.
I gotta believe you passed California. That's
good
a tough
to
one.
Sorry.
I'm sorry.
Good to know.
Yeah.
None of us have taken one of those exams,
to,
right?
So. Waive the background and the SE exam for 8E1A and 1B.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor of accepting the application to waive the SE exam for Mr. Stewart Scott, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Kalika?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Ms. Stanky?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, we have unanimous vote. Congratulations, Mr. Stewart. Or Mr. Scott.
Thank you guys very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I butchered that one. That's pretty good.
A little southern accent there.
Okay, item 8F. Again, 1A, 1B. Julie?
8F, Mr. Collier, for the board for background review, also with DUI, disorderly conduct in 2015. And then he has that council record where he's showing 5 years of engineering experience, but only 3.1 under a license. To accept the council record.
So is Mr. Collier online? No. Okay.
And it looks like he was licensed in South Carolina and Georgia in 2019. Just as an engineer. He took the PE in 2018 and the FE in 2015.
Okay. Discussion?
Yeah, good experience looking at projects.
So he's registered in South Carolina via exam. It says engineering, but we don't know if that's some generic broad thing.
That's a blanket that a lot of the states do.
And so he wants to be mechanical here. Is that right?
He has a degree in aerospace.
That's mechanical.
That's cool. I got a general question. for Julie and maybe the Judith. When these guys fill these out, if they're already registered somewhere else, then they get to skip sections of this. But it would help, you know, guys like me who want to look at their education and their qualifying experience, because some of these pages are blank.
Yeah, they can skip several sections if they have a council record because it's already been verified by the National Council.
But sometimes we don't get...
we get a copy of that?
We don't get that kind of background on some of these applications. It would help me to just understand what he's been doing prior to coming here, experience education. Is there any way we can modify the application to get us... So when we look at these things, it's that page 3964 and 6.3. Qualifying experience, I mean, those pages are empty. And
I mean,
references.
Typically, if they have that council record with NCWS or NCLARB, they've provided.
So that's Julie's job, is to make sure she's gone through all that and she's cleared it. So
right,
okay.
And that's why she'll always put in there, you know, how you see it's Mr. Collier's NCWS council record shows that, you know, that they've already verified that. That's supposed to make it easier for you.
Personally, I'd rather see the resume along with the...
Well, the resume might not have everything on it that we need to verify per statute and law. I mean,
maybe this won't have to do with an application. If it comes this far, then we can request additional information from the applicant, knowing it's going before the board.
Well, we can always ask for that, but obviously, if Julie's done the research, I feel pretty good about that. But sometimes when I'm looking at this prior to, sometimes it's nice to be able to look at their background some. So I don't know if it's worth changing the whole process just to keep me happy.
For you?
I mean, is...
Well, we really would like that.
I think that, I won't go off the trail because my attorney here will stop me, but the council, between the councils and the boards across all the jurisdictions, they want to make it as user-friendly as possible for those applying. And ideally, those council records in our state systems could have that electronic handshake and transfer information so they don't have to provide everything twice, you know.
Yep, I get that. All right.
I can't
change.
Any more discussion by the board? You want to make a motion?
Can somebody tell me what the background review is? I mean, I'm looking through all this court stuff, but I don't know what. Can't tell what happened or what he did or didn't do.
There's some documents in there. I believe it was public disorderly conduct on a watercraft.
Oh, on a watercraft.
It's
like a DUI in a watercraft? Or?
No, there's actually page 3980 of the packet under questions. It gives an explanation of two different incidents.
Okay, is there any more discussion on this item? Somebody want to make a motion?
A motion we accept the registration as mechanical engineer for Mr. Corbin Collier.
Okay. Can I get a second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Hack. We have a motion to accept the application for registration as mechanical engineer for Corbin Collier. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Galika?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Ms. Stanky?
Aye.
Thank you. We have a unanimous vote, Kurt. Okay, licensing. Julie?
Number nine is our consent agenda. So A is the list of the cancellations that have been expired for one full renewal period. B is the list of registrations granted in the last month. C, universal applications. D, our extension requests. And then E or H are other background or disciplinary actions, which I have added to that spreadsheet, hopefully for easier viewing.
Okay, we need a motion then.
One comment on the cancellation of license for one term, 3 years, I guess. There seems to be something in the statute that refers to 5 years. May have a conflict.
I don't know the 5 year.
I'll bring it next time. Just wanted to mention it.
There
is something about, you know, we talk about the 3 years, but there's something specific that no action can be taken, and they disclose 5 years.
An overarching state statute that's not
it's
part
in
of
the
our
statute. Yeah. I will try to find it and bring it.
You can send it to me anytime you find it.
Okay. I was actually working on something, but stacked.
I think we just have one call in regarding agenda item 9. Is it John Bailey?
Oh, yeah, he was on the line again if there's any questions. But.
So we need to approve 9-8.
Unless anybody's willing to take out.
So, right. If you don't have anything to take out, whatever you want to do, if you're happy with it all, consent.
Okay, we have
9B.
That doesn't take a vote, though, does it? 9B. I guess we could.
You can do all of 9.
Yeah, I mean, you can do all
of
9.
Yeah, we can do all of 9. I would be in agreement with that.
Mm-hmm. All items, unless you have something,
we wouldn't do that.
Pull out A through.
It would have been granted. Haven't we already agreed to, or you agreed to it on our behalf?
Well,
yeah. Yeah, A and B wouldn't really need to be approved per se. A is expiration.
Administrative.
That's administrative expiration. B would be, would be ones that have already been granted by the executive director. So unless the board wanted to review the delegation of authority to grant them or something like that, they would need to approve A or B.
Okay.
So we can accept a motion. Can we do all of 9s, or we need to do just the C's, then D's, or all of months?
Well, I would move to accept 9 C's, 1 through 4, 9 D extension requests, 1 through 8. We'll start there.
Okay. We have a motion to accept 9 C's and 9 D's. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Thank you. All those in favor of accepting staff recommendations for 9 C and 9 D's, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Mr. Kalika?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Ms. Danke?
Aye.
We have a unanimous vote. Thank you. Okay, 9E.
I move that we accept 9E, dismiss or move forward for 9E, 9F, 9G, and 9H.
Sorry.
Background review.
You said to accept. You didn't say dismiss or move forward. What did you say?
Either like dismiss or move forward. That, if it's a background check, we dismiss that that, then they can move forward. And I would do that for the remaining 9E, 9F, 9G, and 9H.
Okay. Board, any discussion on any of those applications or reviews? Any discussion, board?
This is Stacy Skanky. I would move to second that.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to accept all the 9Es, F, G, and Hs. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anybody opposed? Okay, Mr. Kalika.
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Mr. Lindgren?
Aye.
Ms. Stanky?
Aye.
Okay, we have an unanimous vote, Kurt. Thank you. Okay, that gets us through the licensing.
Wait. E is just a list for the look at. A is not A they must vote on. We can't cancel our registrants.
So we need to make a vote on 9A1. We just started with 9C.
Oh, 9A. Okay, yeah.
Okay, so we need a motion to accept staff recommendation for cancellation.
Sorry, who motioned?
So there was a second. I need an original motion.
I move that we approve staff recommendation for item 9A to cancel registration and certifications.
Second.
And we have a second. All right. All those in favor of accepting the cancellation list out of 9A, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Mr. Kalika?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Ms. Stanky?
Aye.
Thank you.
If I can just have my own opinion and the one writing down the motions and stuff. When you guys come to 9 and you have absolutely no issues with anything on there, you can do a single motion. We consent all of 9, agenda item 9.
Oh,
it's all
right.
Done. Don't have to think about it. Okay.
Very good.
But if you have any questions or issues and want something pulled out, you can always pull out any item you want to discuss. Otherwise,
okay, policy matters.
Okay, well, 10A, Mr. Chair, we are still waiting on that and still in a hold pattern. So hopefully we'll have something for you next month on that to report.
Okay.
10B, we need a public member to serve on our Home Inspector Rules and Standards Committee. As required in statute, you need a public board member.
We're looking for a volunteer.
Volunteer.
Just kidding. Anybody anxious? We need the statutes require that we have two members of the board on this committee, Home Inspector Rules and Standards Committee.
I thought they had to be engineers.
No, just one. Architect or engineer.
Yeah.
And a public member.
The other one had to be a public member.
Right. So Mr. Kalika's on as our board member architect, but now we need a public member. Public member.
We had
Mr. Green.
Aaron Green, and yeah.
I'll do it.
We'll do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Thank you, Mr. Sure.
Very good.
Do we need a motion, or is that just a volunteer thing to be on a committee?
Just volunteer.
Yeah, it can just be.
Okay.
So non-binding is what you're telling me.
Right, thank you.
Okay, the most exciting part of the board meeting today, 10C. Mr. Scott Bishop is here from NCWS, our engineering national organization, to chat with us and present. Come on up here, Scott. And he flew in from Utah just to meet with us today. He is the Western Zone President. The organization is so huge, they've got us divided up into zones. And the Western Zone takes in also, forgive me if I'm confusing with another organization, but don't we take in the Mariana Islands?
Yeah,
Guam. Alaska.
Yeah, the kind of Western United States.
Like, so. Really Western. So.
West of the Mississippi or west
no,
of the Rockies?
We'll kind of jump through that, and I appreciate you, and I hate to disappoint you if I'm the highlight of the meeting today. It's not much. So appreciate your time and effort. I was telling Judith, on the first call for votes, I almost said aye. I hate to say this, but I kind of missed this. I was on the Utah board for 8 years. My term ended just a year ago. And so I was, I'm a licensed surveyor. I'm licensed in Arizona. Last time I was in this building, actually, took my state exam, and the fire alarm went off right in the middle of it. So it was a good break from the exam. Hopefully, good things will look better today. So I'm a consultant. Like I say, I have no idea how I was appointed to the Utah board, licensing board, at age 32, but I was. So as a young person, NCES was very interested in outreach and promoting licensure, because a lot of individuals at NCES, and I don't know if you realize this or not, but all of you are members of NCES by appointment to your board. So that's how that works. And so they had a young individual that they wanted to get out in front of college students and elementary people to promote engineering and surveying and elect the candidate. And so that's how I did it and got involved. And I found that NCS is a great group of people who have like-minded interests. And as I've heard the discussion here, I've got a packet. I don't know. I think you've got there. I just want to do death by PowerPoint, especially when nobody was here. I took a few notes on a few things, and I'm happy to circle back and maybe offer a little bit more insight that I gathered. If you have anything you want to cover or questions you want to ask, I will do my best, and I have no problem saying, let me get the answer and find out. I'm not a ringer for NCES, right? I'm a surveyor from Southern Utah, and so that's where I am. So is there any questions anybody wants me to cover or topics not to even touch?
Nothing that we wouldn't want to talk about, or me personally. But I mean, I think for me, the biggest issue on my mind has been discipline-specific licensing in Arizona. And I mean, I still feel like I'm fairly new to the board, although I do feel like things are gelling in my mind a little bit better at this point. But so I believe that Arizona is only one of four states that still license engineers as discipline specific. And it's very specific in our laws. I mean, we have 17 branches of engineering that are spelled out there. And so if you get your professional engineering stamp, it's not just PE engineering, it's PE civil or PE electrical or, you know, specific to whatever. Like our gentleman today, Ben, control systems engineer, you know. And I don't think that is in line with any of the national trends. Even NCWS's vision of license portability and helping individuals be licensed in multiple states. I mean, my gosh, whether it's architecture, engineering, whatever, most people are licensed in multiple states. I've found, I mean, I guess there's some people out there that are only licensed in one state, but geologists as well. I mean, seriously, any of those professions, I've noticed they're licensed in multiple states. And so part of the other problem is that Arizona's law doesn't currently have anything that speaks to reciprocity or comity. So that's not doing anybody any favors. And then they came out with universal, but that requires residency in the state. Well, you know, if you're licensed in Arizona, you don't live in Arizona, we wouldn't want you to not be licensed in Arizona. We want to encourage that, and we want to make it easier for people. And so, and I want to say that anybody I've worked with so far at NCWS has been very kind, very helpful, very willing to say, you know, how can we work with you on that? Because to be honest, we're kind of a pain in the neck for that organization as well. Julie can attest to that, because they don't keep track of the discipline that you took your professional exam in, because we can't get that information. So we're trying, our laws are forcing us to verify these very specific, discipline-specific things with engineering, and the other states don't have it. Like all the things Julie has listed where it says discipline unknown, you know, because you're coming from whatever, Minnesota or something, and you're a professional engineer, not professional civil engineer or something. And so they don't know what the individual took the national exam in, and they don't really care either. So that's my hot button right now that I feel like Arizona needs some attention and help with.
Sure, and again, I'm very familiar with Utah and several of the Western Zone states. I've been to several of these meetings. And again, this is something NCS has offered, and so we reached out to every state and said, hey, would you like someone to come and explain? A lot of new board members and turnover, especially with COVID and the weirdness the last couple of years. You're correct, Judith. Arizona is a little bit unique, and in a lot of the other states, a PE is a PE, and you are allowed to practice in your area of proficiency based on your education experience. And as a professional, we respect that, and it's picked up on the back end of the discipline, right? If you practice beyond the area of your scope and expertise, similarly to some of the conversation you had today, even a licensee in a very specific area can practice beyond the scope of their experience or education or anything else, even if they're mechanical. But if they're doing something in mechanical that they shouldn't be doing, they shouldn't be doing it, right?
Right, and I'm super glad you mentioned that, because that would be a concern too, as well, what happens? But that's basically the same thing as you would see right now, is that if that whatever discipline of engineer kind of, let's say, colors outside the lines, outside their scope of practice, and a complaint is filed and it comes to the board, it would be processed the same way. And I would imagine even the way we process investigations using the enforcement advisory committees, you'd still be looking at experts in whatever particular field the complaint was alleged for.
Yeah, we get a lot of cases coming before us where civils are trying to be structurals.
Yeah.
And of course, in the state, they're allowed to do a certain level of structural work. But there's a subjective line in there, a barrier that threshold gets crossed, and problems occur. But technically, they're allowed to do a lot of the stuff that we might question.
Yeah, I kind of made the joke that people always ask, right? And you probably have this experience of, where is that line? How far can I? And I always say, I don't know where that line is, but it's pretty evident when you've crossed it. But again, so it's very subjective to say, you can do three stories and up to 200 people occupancy. You can't do schools or hospitals. And so architects, civil engineers, structural engineers, there's definitely some crossover and overlap. But yeah, when you cross it, you've crossed it. And you may have found that too. It's really hard to say you can get up to this line, just don't go across it in some areas.
You know, but for the consumer, like the people where they hear about the house, if it's just an engineer, just an architect, or to say engineer, you don't know what their real experience is. They're going to tell you something. But if they had to say, oh, I'm an electrical engineer, I'm a civil engineer, at least that's your first cut at it. As a consumer, you have at least your first cut is, oh, this guy's civil, he should be able to help me. As opposed to, oh, this guy's an engineer, he says he can help me, but I don't know.
Yeah, and I have found that, and I always use this, again, as a surveyor, I always think when Grandma Smith calls me and says, I need my 3 acre split into 1 acre tracts for my two children, she's calling me surveyor. Well, does that mean that the person out there, the technician, the survey rodman that's holding the rod is the surveyor? Grandma Smith just knows that the guy standing on the side of the road with the camera is a surveyor. Whether they're licensed or not, they're a surveyor. Average public, when they call an engineer, they're an engineer. They don't know if they're control systems or electrical. An engineer is an engineer. Kids grow up, they want to be doctors, attorneys, engineers.
Landscape architects.
Landscape architects, absolutely. Kids don't grow up wanting to be surveyors. Sorry, but it's just one of those things that kids just don't. And they don't grow up wanting to become a mechanical engineer. I just want to be an engineer.
Yeah, but those engineers drive trains.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's interesting, you know, you kind of, Mr. McAllister, talked about the control system in here. So that, this discussion first today started with the request for the plumbing, right? Well, plumbing today is underneath mechanical, right? But there's been a request of NCES, and NCES has policy and statement that says if 10 licensing boards come to NCES and say, we want a new exam,
will NCS will create it. So they've got a nuclear exam, they have a control system exam, and they actually had 11 states that submitted the request, and Arizona was one of them. And it was, the request, we just had a board of directors meeting, it just came from for NCS, and the request was, we support this, but didn't really say as to why you're supporting it. And so they just wanted to drill down a little bit deeper, more of a legal, you know, just to make sure that, that things are on the same there. So, the plumbing exam may be one. Control system is definitely a low-volume exam. There's not a lot of candidates, and so it's not offered quite as often as some of the other ones. You talk about the industrial exemption. Some people are familiar with that. Yeah, if you're working, the Boeing, a lot of the aircraft, a lot of industrial oil and gas, you know, the BP oil spill out the Gulf, industrial exemption. They don't have to be a licensed engineer to do that. The Challenger rings on the O-rings on the Challenger, right? The engine licensed engineer said, I don't think this is going to work. Well, it got overrode. And so some of those things, and I'm a huge proponent of keeping the pendulum in the middle. Right now, everything is so poor, one extreme or the other. Let's deregulate, get all rid of all licensing, or let's make this so restricting. There's room in the middle. NCES was organized just over 100 years ago, and it was really to increase mobility. To have an engineer in South Carolina that wants to work in North Carolina, how can they make this happen? It is still our number one task, and something we talk about every meeting is, how do we increase mobility? As a surveyor, to get licensed in Arizona, I had to come and take the Arizona state-specific exam. I had no problem with that. I remember one of my first NCS meetings, there was some push to do away with those state-specific exams. They were a hurdle for licensure. And I remember a gentleman from Arkansas saying, if you can't come to my state, if you don't respect me enough to come to my state and take my test, you don't deserve to be licensed here. As a Southern gentleman, I appreciate that. Legally, that's not going to go, and so there's just some differences of things out there. But I would like to flip through some of this and introduce y'all to NCES. I don't know if that's the best way to do it and kind of go through some of these things. I would like to highlight the vision and mission of NCES. And hopefully it shouldn't be anything new to you, but it's to provide leadership and professional licensure of engineers and surveyors through excellence in uniform laws, licensing standards, and professional ethics in order to help safeguard the health, safety, and welfare of the public and to shape the future of professional licensure. And then our mission is to advance licensure for engineers and surveyors in order to promote the safety and health of welfare of the public. And so the way the NCS accomplishes those things is we have the exams, the FE, the PE, the preliminary exams, and then the PE. We provide uniform laws and rules that, in theory, each state in hopes, and again, NCES is made up of 69 licensing boards across the country, so it's this group saying this should be the national standard for laws and rules. Some states come back and readily accept those. Utah actually did the model rules. We adopted them by statute into ours, so we didn't have to go in and update each one of those. We could just say we're going to incorporate the NCS model rules of professional conduct. They're in the national standard. And so it made our lives a little bit easier. They promote ethics and then some international things. One thing I'd like to mention with the verification. When I got licensed in Utah and I was going to do that, I think Arizona was the second state, and I just paid and filled the whole application. And when my company came to me and said, hey, let's get you licensed in Nevada, I'm like, okay, this is ridiculous. I'm going to go create that council record. And so I had to send out letters to all my references, my experiences. Of course, NCS had my examinations. And at this point, I had been licensed for 10 or 15 years, and they had questions about my beginning Rodman experience when I was 20 years old and started surveying, packing a lath bag. And part of me, I'm like, why does this even matter, what I did? They are very exacting. And so when you say, hey, I'd like to have some information, they kind of hold that highest threshold of exam experience, education, and they're very particular on what they will accept. And so if NCES has approved it, it will meet any national standard for recognition. I think those could be available to you. If you want to include those in the package, you could get the council record and actually attach those in there. So it's something that's available to you. But just know that licensure is kind of minimal competency to get licensure. But NCES, the model laws, and the model to become a model law engineer is you've graduated from a four-year ABET accredited degree, I graduated from Idaho State University, and I was in the class that was used for the ABET accreditation, and they got it 8 months after I graduated, so I'm not a model law surveyor. They used me to get accredited, but they got accredited after I graduated. So it just is what it is, and hasn't hurt my career. So,
Do you find that certain states have supplementary exams become registered? Seismic, like in California?
California has seismic, and that was another point. The 16-hour Western Coast has to deal strictly with seismic. It's those, that ring of fire, the Oregon, Washington, California, they're a little more interested in the structural seismic component versus just the national 16-hour structural exam. Other than surveying, you know, a lot of states, and I was on the Utah board, for PEs to get licensed in another state, you submit your application, and Utah used to have as part of their application a true and false quiz that was a test about Utah statutes and things. When the big push to go everything online, the problem was if you answered incorrectly one of those, it rejected your application because it was tied to your application. And so a lot of states or several states have done away with supplemental exams for PE. And because some would say, we want you to, there are questions about our laws and rules in our state specific. Well, as a surveyor with the quasi-judicial boundary component, right, there are some things that as a surveyor we need to know things and take those extra tests. There's been a push to eliminate those. And there's talk about expanding the national surveying exam to do that. Well, it's hard because I have to determine boundaries, and there's state statutes and case law that create precedents in states that vary. A lot of engineering is similar. PE is a PE, mechanical, right? And you practice in your area of expertise. And so from the engineering side, there are not a lot of other states that have additional exam requirements for their state specific. The majority of them are the national exams. And you've met that, the three-legged stool, right, of examination, experience, and education.
But by right, each state can, if they want to add a supplemental, they can.
Absolutely, yeah. And the national council doesn't even get involved with that, right? We're promoting licensure. We're trying to assist state boards to say, hey, let's talk about reciprocity in the right ways. Again, I think to just outright say we're going to accept anybody for any reason, well, that pendulum to me swings a little too far. But boy, if their state of initial licensure matches our requirements here, what additional hoops do they need to jump through, right? If as a surveyor, you know, if they had a 2-year, maybe they went to the experience-only track, which a few states used to have, but maybe don't. So you had an experience-only track, didn't have any education. Well, that could be problematic. Some states could say, no, we want you to have some education unless you've been licensed for X amount of years, right? And so, yeah, there is some, you know, did you graduate from a technical degree or did you have an ABET accredited degree? Well, okay, some of those things you need to look at. But if you've met the model law and you've met that highest standard, well, it makes a lot of sense to me to be able, you've met the three benchmarks of the three areas, they probably ought to be licensed here, provided there's been no disciplinary action, they have no criminal, you know, some of those other things outside of licensure. But to me, that would help expedite and make things a lot easier and remove barriers to licensure. There's a national push right now, and there's a difference between learned professions and occupations, and I know nationally is to, hey, let's just deregulate everything. And again, there certainly is a need to for the economy and resources. Utah just passed a statute that said if a city building official did not review a set of plans within 3 weeks, it could go forward. Unfortunately, it oftentimes takes some type of a disaster for some catastrophic failure, a pedestrian bridge falling in Florida, and that pendulum swings back really far the other way. So right now there's a lot of push of free commerce, economy, let's get rid of all these things. Well, I wish the legislature in Utah would have passed an ordinance saying, here's some money, we'll help you supply some external peer review for these things, instead of just saying, if the city couldn't get a review, because they're buried, right? These rural cities don't have the staff. Well, so now we've got buildings that are going to issue building permits that maybe didn't ever get reviewed. A little bit, right? So to me, the pendulum swings a little bit too far, and it unfortunately does take sometimes not a good experience. And everybody says, stop, we need to bring this back. NCS is not about protecting a profession. You know, there's that argument, right, of we have licensure to perfect our professions, and that's simply not the case, right? It's the health safety more for the public, and they're actually trying right now pretty robustly to help eliminate these barriers, to get rid of the state-specific surveying exam if you can, to eliminate other hurdles, to allow reciprocity, to have states get together. That they actually have a task now as a council, and it was started a couple years ago in the Western Zone, was to have each state look at another state's, and they made assignments, licensure path. Again, being on the Utah board and licensed in several states, it's amazing to me, when I went to go out and fill out another state's application to get licensed, there were some questions I didn't know. And here I am, very involved on a national council, I'm on my state board, I'm licensed in three other states, and I'm getting beat up, and I can't remember which state it was, but I called the state and got one of the administrative assistants and said, hey, I got this question, because as a licensee, the last thing you want to do is mess up the application, because that tells everybody that I shouldn't be licensed, right? Because you can't even do that. And the comment back to me was, this is so simple, you just need to figure it out. And I thought, I wonder if I were to come back in my official capacity now and say, hey, you do this 8 hours a day, every day, this makes 100% sense to you, sure doesn't make sense to anybody else. So right now, they're looking, those providing recommendations to say, hey, Utah, you look at Wyoming and California, did you know that you have these requirements? You know, Alaska requires some Arctic engineering classes in your education. Well, that is a barrier to licensure. It makes sense to me. I would think if you're going to go design in Alaska, you would have to have a course or two in Arctic engineering to appreciate how that works. It's not a bad barrier, but it's a barrier to license. Let's say it's there and it's good and accept it. But some other things probably don't need to be there. Let's eliminate those. Our structure in here, there's 69 boards, and you say, well, how does that work? A lot of boards have separate disciplines, so that would, if in your scenario, that would give Arizona 17 boards. Can you imagine that? A lot of states have a separate surveying board, engineering board, and even a structural board. Right? Illinois has three separate licensing boards. The majority of them are combined, just like this. Some include architects, geologists, some are just engineers and surveyors. It's very interesting. Utah is what we would term as an umbrella organization. They're housed in the Department of Commerce, and so we have state employees and state staff. There are a lot of boards that are very independent. They're a state agency, but they have their own, they hire their own investigators, they control their own budgets and those type of things. They're very independent from a state agency. They show up to meetings and they all have matching shirts, and there's, you know, they bring an entire board, and some of us go, and we're allowed to take two people, and we don't get to go to sexy locations, right? You don't need to go to the Bahamas for a board meeting. You can go to State Line, Nevada to a board meeting. And again, just difference of boards. And so, yeah, the Western Zone is there. And I won't go through this whole packet. It's there for your information. It really comes down to the members of NCDS are you, are members of boards. I think there's 900 board members, and then 800 exam development engineers. So they'll bring in engineers and surveyors. They're headquartered out of Greenville, South Carolina. They're not in Washington, D.C. They're kind of a different group than most national organizations. But they'll prepare exam questions. They'll review exams. One big push now is taking all the exams to CBT, computer-based testing, away from the old 8 hours, you know, in a conference center taking this exam. It's now online, which allows huge flexibility. It used to be offered twice a year, April, October, and now a candidate can find a testing center in Phoenix or somewhere close, pick the date that's open, that there's a slot available, and take that exam. They're allowed to take it three times a year instead of just twice a year if they don't pass. So there's a ton of feedback. They used to take months to get the results because, you know, you had to pack up all the things and ship them back and make sure all the exam booklets got back and the little bubble sheets and then scan them. And now with the algorithm and things, they get notified every Wednesday, results roll out. And so there's a lot of happy or sad people Wednesday mornings, whether they pass their exams or not. And so a lot of those things are just trying to increase. One big thing they're working on now, which I think would be very interesting to staff, is the new system that would tie NCES and state databases and allow them to communicate together. They just started it, and they've got a few states they're going to pilot with. I think next year they're still developing the software. NCDS obviously has candidate information for people to take the exams. They don't know what state you're licensed in. They don't know your disciplinary action. They don't know all those type of things. They do have continuing education. It's a free service. You can go in and you can track and upload your continuing education credits for those states require it. They have the, like we talked about earlier, the ability to create a council record that you could just transmit to any state. And they do have an exchange for disciplinary action. And that was one of the things we're talking about now, and it happened in your meeting. Someone stipulated to surrender their license in lieu of disciplinary action. Well, that's still disciplinary action, but now this individual were to go get licensed in Utah, there was no disciplinary action because they surrendered. There's a loophole for a candidate, so they're trying to change the NCDS model rules to say, to include, disciplinary action includes surrendering your license in lieu of, just trying to close a little simple loophole, right, that doesn't necessarily need to be there. So, like I said, NCDS staff, and I am impressed, and again, I'm my term is up in August, and so I will no longer be on the NCDS Board of Directors, and I can't wait to just go to a meeting and sit in the back room. That's what I tell people now. I was involved with my state society and everything else, but they are a great group of people. There's 75 employees, and they're to support all the licensing boards, and they truly are interested in just helping people out, and they're good people.
Scott, you should tell them to throw Arizona in as a guinea pig state for that, because that API technology transfer between council record and, because we're just as soon as the funding, I'm assuming the legislature will grant us our budget, ask for an online transition. And we're going to jump into that as soon as the new fiscal year starts, and we'd be primed to be a guinea pig for that. You should just mention that.
Absolutely, I'll be happy to pass that along. I mean, that's the electronic handshake you referenced, right?
Right.
Just the ability, and some states right now, if you want to sit for an exam, some states have automatic approval. So if a candidate wants to take the FE exam. Some states, or NCDS says, okay, here's the benchmark. You need to be in your junior or senior year of a degree program. These are criteria you must meet. Some states have automatic. So Scott Bishop applies to take the exam in Utah, and Utah says, yep, if he's met your requirements, good to go. Other states say, nope, we want to have a board meeting and go through every candidate and look through them.
And that's where we're at on that,
right?
One too, which is not helpful.
And so it takes a candidate a long time to
really
do those things. Verification. So if you're licensed in multiple states and you submit a record to Arizona and they say, we want to see your proof of your Utah license and the other ones. Well, if this system's all integrated, NCDS would have that immediately. If not, they send it, and Louisiana was there and said in the week they had 78 requests for licensure verifications from other boards. And the individual that processes that was out of the office on vacation, and so they were just stacking up. So these candidates are waiting for a license because one person's out of the office, and that just builds. So the concept is, hey, let's have these systems, databases talking back and forth. There likely could be some legal rights, some legislative issues to make those work, and some states are set up, those autonomous boards have a lot less the server to get access, I can imagine, to a state server, the IT hurdles to jump through, right, for an outside organization would be huge. For an autonomous board that has that stuff independent, just a lot more streamlined legal stuff to go through. So, I can absolutely say, and again, that's so out of my world.
Right.
I feel like sometimes, I'll never forget my first board meeting I went to. I was 32. I was actually doing construction staking at the Atlas by the football stadium here in Arizona when I got the phone call that told me I'd been appointed to the board. And I went there, and there were three individuals on probation. One had was growing marijuana in his office. One had child pornography on their computer. And then these candidates were there and were talking and going through to get reinstated. I felt so uncomfortable, right? I didn't know. And the third one was a civil engineer practicing structural. I'm like, I'm so on this guy. This is the one I can deal with. Some things are certainly a lot more in your wheelhouse than others. But I would encourage you, NCS has meetings. They have two meetings. They have a zone meeting, which I think the announcement just came out. You may have all just received that. It'll be in State Line, Nevada, Lake Tahoe, in May. That's kind of a precursor to the annual meeting where they talk about these different motions and the direction and threats to licensure. Great networking for people in your group. Yeah.
Is that going to be online as well, or only in person?
No, it's only in person.
And we have talked and wish we could do it online. We have found that when you announce and say there will be a hybrid or an online version, states will say if there's an online option, we're not allowed to travel. There's certainly something to be said with being here in person that is there.
Another question: yes. Are all the exams now and CBT, computer-based?
Not the structural.
Only one that's not is the structural exam. They just converted the PE exams in January this year. Went great. The structurals are scheduled for next year. And part of that is just the written response. I'm trying to think of the proper term. Right? You got to write a big paragraph explaining it. That's pretty hard to do online.
That meeting, I can't remember what the name of the meeting was. The meeting where the gentleman that was on the education committee spoke specifically about that structural exam. It was, I don't know what adjectives I want to use. It really sets you back when you realize how extensive that structural engineering exam is and what's required of it, and so how difficult that one is to make computer-based.
They bring in hundreds of volunteers to review those and try to, you can imagine, right, just removing subjectivity from looking at a candidate's exam to see if they pass the 16-hour structural exam. And with COVID, they did it remote and online. And so instead of bringing everybody in one group, and that was really, that slid up this date of, hey, there's other options. COVID was good in a lot of different reasons and bad in some others.
Because I think even after a candidate finishes the exam, three structural engineers grade and review each exam. Can you imagine how much material?
Multiple choice?
Open-ended response. The structural, the morning session is multiple choice, and then the second half is, this is how you're going to determine these structural vertical loads, and yeah, it's not a multiple choice. It's a open-ended response.
Show your work.
Mm-hmm. Buildings and
yeah.
Bridges.
The annual meeting will be in Scottsdale, or the annual meeting, so the zone meeting is in May, and it's the last week of school, and the annual meeting is in August. It's the first week of school, so my wife never gets to go with me because we've got young kids that are trying to get to different things. It'll be in Scottsdale. They have the different committees.
Here in Arizona? Scottsdale?
No, I'm sorry. We had one in Arizona like 2 years ago. It'll be in Carlsbad, California.
Oh. Sorry. Yeah, I was like, I didn't know it was going to be here.
Sorry. Yeah.
Okay.
See you there.
Well, California's close.
But it's a great opportunity. They have, as part of that, they have a law enforcement forum. They'll bring in techniques for investigators. Not surprisingly, most investigative groups are very good investigators, but they know little about the disciplines that they're investigating, right? They're former law enforcement or something else, and so they have great investigators. So they'll bring in someone to help bridge the gap, to help them understand, some best practices. And so they have a law enforcement forum there, and great opportunities to say, hey, what are you doing in your state? How can we do this better here? So I would encourage you to get involved. They have exam committees. And like I say, it's weird that I enjoy it. You'll sit here, I'm like, I kind of miss this. They have bylaws and all sorts of different committees that I'm not so interested in.
We do offer audio.
I thought about it. Like, I should go back and listen to some of the Utah board. I was thinking that this morning. I'm like,
yeah, it's fun.
Maybe I have some free time. I'll go back and listen to the board meetings I've missed. So,
how do you guys handle the foreign applicants?
They have a group designated that is just does that. That does foreign applicants, and they will request a lot of the syllabi and different things for their education experience, because we do have a lot from Egypt and the Middle East and some out of Japan and Asia, a lot of engineering applicants that come in. And so once they've done one or two, kind of like any, if you graduated from Ohio State in this year, NCES knows this was what was required, and that's good. They don't have to redo that every time. And so, internationally, the same principle. You graduated from this international university in this time frame. here's the classes, okay. But so the candidates do have to supply any information the NCS needs to make that determination. Just like you can request today for more experience or something else. But they have a group that does just that.
But they'll take your exam, though. They'll take this exam.
They'll take the FE or the PE exam. And, you know, one thing in Utah, and this was a barrier to licensure, we changed our rule. We had an individual who came from the Middle East whose education far surpassed any requirement in America. They did not have a liberal arts class that was required for licensure.
We had that.
So this individual had to go back to the community college and take a PE or badminton or some class, and then wait 4 years after they completed their education to get licensed. We said, that's not right. So we said, if that's your scenario, we'll allow you to do your 4 years concurrent or before. So they still had to go take that one class, but then they did not have to wait the 4 years. That was, to me, was a barrier that shouldn't be. And those are the things that I think NCES and hopefully as boards, we would try to eliminate these hurdles that legally, right, we cannot interpret statute. That's what it says. That's what it is, period. Okay, that's not right. Let's get that fixed.
I got a question, Judith, and Julie, you might know this too. We get a lot of out of country, mostly Canada, but if they come in and want to get registered here, do we assume they have an NCES? Is that required? Do we require an NCS record, even though they're out of state, out of country?
They could have it.
We don't require the NCWS council record. We love it when they have it because it's so much easier. But no, we don't require it.
Same thing for NCRB and CLARB. And
right.
It's not required.
There are a few states that have done that just because, again, the workload on staff that just say, we require you to have a council record. It doesn't cost anything for an individual to create that council record. I think it's $150 to transmit it to your first state, and then $75 because once you've transmitted it, once you've done it once, and again, I had this experience, every 6 months, things lapse. So you need to go re-verify your experience, the people that vouch for you.
How often do you have to do that?
Like every 6 months. Well, you don't have to, but they're good for 6 months. So if I... and it's all electronic, so you used to have to send out the letter to
who the reference, people.
Reference. The references. References. Right? And they have to put their stamp and send it back to the board. They can't come back to you. Well, now, and I have people that work for me that are getting licensed, so I'll get this email from NCES and says, here is Scott Bishop's, what he typed. Is this accurate? Is this a good representation? Do you support this person being licensed? Is there anything you want to tell us? What states are you licensed in? Okay, and it's submitted automatically. Well, if that candidate goes to get licensed and 7 months later, they're going to send me an email and say, hey, they want to use you again. Is this still current? So it's 10 seconds to go back through. But yet, every 6 months, they're going to make you, right? They don't want you to wait 5 years and something's happened. And so.
Wow, that seems like it could be burdensome.
Yeah.
To some degree, because what if they don't respond in a timely fashion?
They don't.
I guess the candidates that have listed me as a reference, to me it's no different than, let me rephrase that. It's for new licensure for 6 months. So it's not every 6 months you just continue to update the whole time you're licensed.
Oh, God.
If you're applying for Utah, 7 months later you apply for Idaho, you're going to have to get those updated. If you supply...
Updated now.
Well, you just go, it's online, you just say, hey, I want to go and apply for Idaho. They're going to send him up and say, hey, is Scott still, is this all good for you? If it's been 6 months, I can apply for 20 different states.
So they can first say that, yes, he's good, and then 6 months later say, nah, he's no good.
Yeah, this just happened. He was convicted of a crime, moral perpetuity, right? They want that. I would want to know that, right? This person was great, but things have changed. He's gone off the rail. He's now an addict. He's got these other problems going on. Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, again, I'm here to help, and someone else will be here in a few months when I'm not. NCS has a great staff to support, to reach out from bills that they have right now with the threat to licensure. They're trying to think of the term. It's in your, I keep wanting to say NCARB. The ARPL, Alliance for Professional Licensing, they've got together with architects and several other licensed groups. with the bills that are happening, and NCDS has a person on staff that is tracking every state and every bill that's happening. Utah has one now that it's not a universal licensure bill, but it's promoting licensure. There's a bunch, and NCDS actually just created a scholarship for military spouses, and right now that we're working on waiving that the exam fees for military people, right? And so just trying to help eliminate these barriers of licensure. When you get your spouse gets stationed, and now you're an engineer, have to get licensed somewhere, well, that can be a huge issue. Right, that's a little different situation, and there are few and far between. It's not like there's thousands of candidates happening.
Could you explain briefly the difference you see between the professions and the occupations? It seems like there's a mix-up at times.
There is, and I don't know, and certainly don't. I got to be careful how I say this, because I'm a very just matter-of-fact kind of person, and so I'm trying to do better at being sensitive and not saying anything. To me, it's an issue of health, safety, and welfare of the public. If an engineer, a doctor, does something wrong, someone will die, potentially, right? A pharmacist, he's medical, right? If a florist, barber, what other things are, what occupations are licensed?
Massage therapy.
And so, right, I guess the catastrophic nature, the risk to me is where that line deviates. I would hope that, you know, as a surveyor, my education, my experience, my examination, not discounting any of those other occupations, attorneys are a little bit separate. They write the laws, and they somehow write themselves out of all licensure, right? So attorneys are not licensed, correct? So attorneys are not licensed.
Well, they got to take a state.
We are, but not by the state, right? We created our own.
The individuals write the rules, create their own set of rules, and it works for them. And I will tell you that they don't fool around. I don't know other attorneys in the room, but you know. When you go before the bar, it's not a pleasant experience, and they don't kind of, well, okay, we'll give you another shot. They do a very good job of policing their own.
You go in front of any attorney, it's not a pleasant experience.
And so, yeah, I don't know if that answers your question, but yeah, there, in my mind, there definitely is a distinction of occupation and professions.
But that seems to be the thing that's we're fighting about nationally. They're trying to open, say, these professions up to anybody, anytime, and it's not safe.
And again, unfortunately, it will likely take some catastrophic situation, and then that pendulum will swing back. And this has happened. You can go back and almost pinpoint the hospital collapse in Texas, and this school, and this gas explosion, this pedestrian bridge in Florida, right? Florida had a bunch of reactionary. I mean, that's what lawmakers do. They got to please the constituent. This happened. Okay, let's make a bunch of laws to do this.
But it's so frustrating that it's reactive. Government is typically reactive.
But it's a reality. And so, yeah, we need to find ways. And so ARPL, the Alliance for Professional Licensing, they're not necessarily lobbying, but they're willing to come and help and support. And UNCS has supported Arizona specifically to come here and help talk to legislatures, provide materials, to provide statistics and facts. They went to Cambridge and did a research project to find the factual numbers of, you know, it's hard to go on Capitol Hill or go up to Capitol and say, engineers are good because we save people's lives. Okay, they need something. You can't just anecdotally say, I feel good about this. And so they've done research and public opinion. People believe that engineers should be licensed. They think doctors should be licensed and pharmacists should be licensed. Some of these other ones, they don't think they necessarily need to be licensed. And so let's get facts out there. They're trying to sit down with some of those groups that are promoting anti-licensure bills. There's a couple groups nationwide. They're kind of foundation and root. Well, they're saying, let's sit down, let's talk about some of these things. We agree with you. We think these are barriers. Let's get rid of those. And we support that. But these other things that protect the public, we don't support those. So let's, instead of just doing a big, you know, sweep across the board, let's eliminate these things that don't make sense or barriers, and let's keep these other ones in place and find better ways to do that.
All right. was really well said. Thank you, Scott.
It's
true, though. I mean, I agree with everything that he just said, and I feel like there's a few things with our laws. I don't want to eliminate. I mean, look, Arizona already is pretty loosey, is that a legal term? In the sense that you can get licensed here with experience only. I mean, you can become licensed with no education, which is like, wow, because, you know, many other states, it's like you have to have the degree, whether it's accredited or not. So we've already got that, and we are also the Wild West with no continuing education. That was one of the biggest shockers for me. I'm like, what? We don't require any continuing education. No background checks required at all for any of the five professions that we register, only the home inspectors and alarm companies, which I also thought that was like, wow, okay, interesting. You know, so I feel like there's not a lot of barriers except the things that I've already mentioned. We need some reciprocity, and we need to look at professional engineering collectively.
So, in a sense, you say there's no background checks when they there's two questions. If they don't, we check if they.
Sorry, you're just not required to submit fingerprints or have a fingerprint clearance card or something like that, which is pretty common in most any occupational board.
But Arizona does have reciprocity in not the stricter, but anybody that's registered in most states can come to Arizona. Fill out the forms,
but they have to complete everything. There's no language in our law that says we have reciprocity or comity.
Even with the NCARB, a CLARB, or NCS.
No,
it makes things easier.
Right, it makes things loads easier. We've got a council record with CLARB, NCARB, or NCWS.
You know, it's interesting, and I applaud and appreciate the lack of requirements, right? With no education, no experience and things. That's right. You could have a candidate who's been practicing for 30 years who wants to be a controls engineer that's got his PhD that just didn't have the right? And so, they're definitely qualified. There's a problem on the back end because an adjoining state may not allow an experience-only path of licensure. So you've granted your person license here. They can't take it anywhere else. There's no mobility for that person to go anywhere else. And so sometimes when we think, oh, we're really going to help everybody come here, well, they can't. They can get in here, but they can't go on the back and they can't go out anywhere. So, and now it's huge. If you know, as a surveyor, surveyors just used to work in their smaller communities, but now they're working in the county and in the state, and I have people that are licensed in like 40 states as a surveyor. Like, there's no, you can't. And Southern Utah, Northern Nevada, the Arizona Strip right there, right? That's all geographically, it's all the same area to me. To be licensed in those areas, it makes sense and is something that's doable. It's ever-changing, and I think that it's important to have a dialogue and to have resources available. And so that would be hoping to take away is there are people and staff at NCS that's their job. It's just to help state boards be more efficient and more effective. And they're willing to take input and work through things and provide resources and some of those surveyors to go talk to people on the state board. So if you have any questions, you
said the Western Zone president here to
The Western Zone vice president again, right? I have my real job and they always joke that NCS pays your payment for being on that is food and drink, right? We donate all of our time. I get no stipend. They cover all of our stuff and I'm like, I'm a cheap date. I don't drink alcohol, so they get up pretty good with me, and some of the other folks make up for it, though. So. I'm just trying to look up everything that you guys talked about, and I think we hit the ones I took some notes. Or several times today, I wanted to just say, "Oh, hey!" And I'll try and take some notes and bring it up later. So, anything else? Anybody have any questions or anything? So
not right now, but I'm sure Judith will.
I'm going to hang on to him, feed him lunch, and hang on to him, pepper him with some more questions.
I asked her and said, should I take, there's a 2 o'clock flight or a 6 o'clock? And She didn't respond, and I started thinking, I'm like, I'll just get the later flight. Maybe I can go find a desk somewhere to sit down.
I should respond.
Well, but in the time, I was trying to book my flight. Oh. And I don't know why no one else was not working on the same time.
I said, the later flight, we'll find you a corner. You can work while you're here.
So, I appreciate the opportunity to come here. And again, it's interesting. Right. I went to the Wyoming board and very familiar with Utah. And there are so many similarities between these boards, and there's very subtle differences in what I'd expect. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Who was the fellow that was here the whole meeting that just left?
I don't know.
Someone
from AIA.
Hi, everybody. This is Mike. Just FYI, I'm going to need to sign off here in probably about the next 5 to 7 minutes. I've got another event I've got to run to. But appreciate the great discussion today. That was very helpful having the NCES representative here.
Mike, you can just announce it when you leave or put it in the chat, either one.
Okay. Sounds great.
And you know, where is he in Hawaii?
I don't remember.
Yeah, go to Hawaii. That's too bad.
No, I'm in Virginia, so
not Hawaii.
He is warm, that's for sure. So
we're good. All right, Judith.
All right. So, director's report. You've got the budget information in front of you. I run that report. Well, I don't run the report. Our Central Services Bureau runs the report for me, and I base the numbers that I report to you on the date that they run the report. And I'm trying really hard to get them to run the report through the end of the previous month. And that probably doesn't even mean anything to you. You're like, why are you even bugging me with that? But I don't know. For me, I'm just like, can you just do this through the end of the calendar month? I don't know. Anyway, just have to say that. Working on it. Just watching the budget as we go through these other projects that are coming up here. We've got the digitization. Oh, my stars. You guys, when it's all done, you're going to have to take a minute and walk through our suite. It feels like we're gaining square footage. Well, I guess we are, because what we've got how many, like 35 cabinets maybe hauled out already?
Yeah, that's the majority of them so far.
What's left, Kurt? One more pickup tomorrow?
I think one more pickup tomorrow, that's it.
So, it's just amazing. I just walk down the hallway in our suite, and I just get all happy because it just looks so much better. So, how's your staff with everything that's been scanned? Are they still happy doing the searches?
Anytime we need a file, ICM is pretty quick to pull it and scan it for us.
Yeah, if they have it in their possession, we just email them, and they've been wonderful.
Really good, clear. It's better than the actual physical file, actually.
They did struggle a little bit with the minute books. Wasn't that the books that we were looking at the pages? But they figured out. I mean,
it was good.
Because we didn't want them to cut the books that are really old, historic books.
Yeah.
So, but it does. It looks pretty good.
And they told us that they can put everything on a single physical hard drive for less than $100. So you guys had asked about that last time.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yes, and for what it's worth, the security issues you asked about with the digitization, you don't even want to know the hoops that we have tried to jump through with Asset to get somebody to come here and just talk to us. Are they still working on that?
Yeah, I think they might be next month. Somebody's going to come
in
here.
We're going to have them do a presentation.
Talk about the security system.
Is there anything else you want to add on that?
No.
Okay. Any questions on that or anything? Just interrupt me, guys. So online transition, I put this back on here just because Kurt and I recently met with the senior account executive, Amanda Precia. She's amazing. She's been our main tie with the online platform that we're looking to transition to that's now... The state has decided they're very happy with, and there's probably 23 other state agencies that are going to utilize this same platform. Some of them have funding in place right now. It was in my budget ask last year, so again, hopefully. We told Amanda, as soon as the budget hits July 1, we're ready to jump in and start on this. Because there's a few other boards that are like, well, let's just see how you do first, you know. But Psychology Board has already used this platform, and they're really happy with it. It's going really well. So. And it, yeah, I've been looking at it even before I came here. So, board staff, we hired a new customer service rep, Jeanette Lopez. She's been really great so far. We're super excited. We're always trying to plug holes. So as I say, we hired that individual. We have two that are retiring at the end of this week, actually, from enforcement. Andrew Pacino, who's just been wonderful doing our financial assurance and a bunch of other things. He's retiring and has some wonderful plans in store. And Doug Kramer, investigator that's been with the board for quite a while. And this is, I think, his... Is this his third retirement? Because he was Phoenix PD, and then didn't he do something else before he came here?
Well, this is his second retirement from here.
Oh, second retirement from here.
Wow. It doesn't really count.
That's so, you know, we wish them all the best. You can't begrudge somebody retiring, right? I mean... board composition, no changes. I just decided I'm just going to have this list for you as part of the report every month, just so you can see everybody's term expiration and who's expired. And I, there is a new director of boards and commissions, and I have emailed her as well. And I don't hear back, but I keep emailing, so just keep trying. We've got our licensing numbers, enforcement numbers for your review. And
if there's going to be a new election or election this November, will these kind of people change, like this new board guy that you're...
It could. In the time since I've been with the state, this is the fifth and eighth director of boards and commissions. I don't usually stay for a super long time, so it certainly could.
But, are all the boards having difficulty filling their...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I can say that without a moment's hesitation. legislation, I don't want to bore you to death. I'm watching some legislation, but there's nothing really specific to this board, which I guess I'm a little bit grateful of this year. There's just some, I'll just run through a few that I noticed. There's one that's had no movement, and I'm grateful for that, honestly, because it's about apprenticeships, and it would require the agency to create pathways to licensure through apprenticeship. And I think, well, we already have pathways through experience, and I think it would require us to create some, like create a new program or something. So anyway, that's not going anywhere. There's some open meeting law legislation out there. One of them is public meeting in-person attendance requires all public body meetings to accommodate in-person attendance, and they may not be held completely online or remotely. That's a Senate bill, and I don't think it's been transmitted to the House, but it is moving. And I don't have any problem with that because I never wanted to be completely remote anyway. I think there should always be the option. There's the digital open meeting law about digital recording. This one, I just have to say, I have to laugh out loud on this one because this requires both written and digital recordings. So I mean, I guess it's just a personal laugh for me because the law used to say, you know, or you could either one, as long as you posted the digital recording within 3 days of your meeting. And so there were other boards that I knew of that were like, ha-ha, I'm never going to do minutes again, you know, because I don't know if you all have ever done minutes, but it's just fun, isn't it, Kurt? It is so fun.
Complete joy.
It's like this agony every month, the minutes. But I always felt like that was completely wrong, personally as well, to just post the recording, because if anybody's looking, I mean, who wants to listen to hours and hours of something? If you know, you're trying to find something quickly, you should be able to look at the minutes. And so even though they're annoying, I always felt like they were necessary. And so I don't care that they're changing it. It's going to be an and instead of an or. And that one is moving. It's unanimously passed the House Bill, Government and Elections and Rules Committee, and it's retained on calendar at the House COW, Committee on the Whole. So I you know, who knows? I'll keep watching it. There's another one about capacity. So this one is interesting because it requires us to provide a, quote, reasonable amount of seating to accommodate the anticipated attendance at your board meeting. So I don't know. That one's moving. It's a House bill, and it is moving. And I'm all right with that, too, I guess, as long as they say reasonable. Because isn't that the one that, like, I think it says the director would get a civil fine or something if I didn't provide reasonable accommodation? Isn't that the bill?
Is there a reward?
I can't speak to the specific bills. There is one that has to do with the executive director specifically providing enough seating for anybody attending a board meeting, a public.
You know, I'm like, well, don't fine me, but I can say again, since the moment I set foot at this board and we were meeting in the smaller room, I said, this is too small. I was flipping out. I'm like, this isn't going to work. And they didn't even have all the 11 positions filled then. And I'm like, we need more room. We need more room. And I have been a seriously squeaky wheel about that to General Services Division. And so that's why that wall behind you is going to get knocked out and moved back. And we're adding technology and we're going to share it with pharmacy. And I'm ridiculously excited about that. We're going to have some technology in here and mics, and it'll just be a proper boardroom setup. And if I haven't said it, I've probably said it already, it's going to be pharmacy, clean elections, and us, technical registration, that we'll be sharing the boardroom. And let's see, did I already boardroom? Oh, I skipped boardroom and suite updates. Okay, sorry, I'm going back there. So I've been asking them repeatedly, when are we going to do this? When are we going to do this? We have state-specific exams. We administer the ASBOG geology exam. That's been scheduled for March 18th for the last year. And they're like,
which
well,
state-specific
you know?
Exams are there?
Just land surveyor.
Oh.
Yeah. But then we also administer the ASBOG national exam. They're going computer-based too, but until they do, I think we have... Is this the last one in March?
The last year.
The last year. So March and October will be the last two that we administer here. So, and you need in fact, I think we typically would use both boardrooms for that, and that's a morning and afternoon. So anyway, Kurt and I met with them, Wednesday last week? And they're like, yeah, March 1st, construction, you got to be out. And I said, I don't think so, because I've been asking you since November. So I said, you have to give us until at least March 22nd, that's our March board meeting, and we would get through that exam period. I said, you can do anything on the other side of this wall until March 23rd, and then you can bulldoze the wall. So probably for April, May, June, we'll need to find somewhere else for our board meetings, and all of our enforcement advisory committee meetings we're looking at. We're really trying to repurpose some space in our suite that hopefully we'll be able to use. Or maybe borrow somebody's space in another suite or floor in this building. But so a little bit of an inconvenience. And they say it's going to be done by the end of this fiscal year. And I don't want to say anything nasty about construction projects, but I'm like, are you sure? So for now, we're saying it should be done by the end of the fiscal year. So they won't probably listen to this recording, so they can't be mad at me for making a snarky remark about that. Any questions about that? I think Kurt did scan the plans, and I brought a larger version of it, if anybody wants to look at while you're here, that shows the walls that are getting changed. And really, this whole, what is that, east, north, wing of the suite, whatever, that whole direction of this building on our floor, other floors too, but, you know, it's just completely changing. Okay, let's see. There's just a couple of other bills I was looking at. I don't know if you guys are looking at any other legislation. There was one about cryptocurrency and state agencies accepting that as a method of payment. Thankfully, there's been no movement on that one. Sort of panicked us just a little bit on how we would work with that. And then there is, I guess the one bill that I'm really looking at is House Bill 2612 that applies to occupational regulation and eliminates good moral character from the 7 professions registered by this board. And not just our board, but I mean, it's that whole bill is like 147 pages long. If you can, I mean, it affects like every occupational regulatory board. They're wiping out good moral character. And as I understand it, this bill came out of a direction from the bill last session, the 2021 legislative session, where they defined moral turpitude and listed more specifics with moral turpitude. I'm looking at Scott because I'm like, I don't want to say this wrong. And basically they're taking out, I don't know if they're looking at good moral character as it being a conflict or muddying the waters with, how did they word it? I'm not saying it right. Where they're looking at criteria for determining whether a person's criminal record disqualifies the person from occupational licensure, specifically pertaining to character, good, honesty, integrity, moral, trustworthy, any statutory language that talks about that. So I don't know. That one is moving. It passed unanimously in Commerce and Rules in the House. It has not been transmitted out of the House yet.
So you're saying that was redefined, or are they just saying you don't need it?
They're just taking it out. Good moral character everywhere that says good moral character. So I don't, you know, it's hard because that.
When you've seen how the legislators operated over the last year, you know, they felt that they had to do something for themselves as well.
Who is running it? What legislators are running it?
Let's see. Burgess. Judy Burgess, District 1, and I believe she is also a Republican, and I only say that because, you know, right now, the way the legislature is configured, a lot of times if it's sponsored by a Democrat, it doesn't go out of committee, you know, so we'll see. I'll keep watching that one.
Would that impact, like, the registration and the questions we would ask or NCEES would ask as part of their, it's become registered in that group?
I don't think it would, our, you know, state statutes would have any impact on what NCEES asks.
So they would, it'd be important for them. But so if these guys had to get registered through them, then they come here to get license, and that was like a stumbling block for them.
No, I don't think so. I mean, because the bottom line is with the criminal history, it still comes to the board for a review, and it goes back to that, does it have a reasonable relationship? And good moral character, correct me if I'm wrong, is a little bit hard to define anyway when you're
right.
You know, so I don't know.
Steve's the model.
Just that's right. Far, just be like Steve.
Well, I'm just thinking in terms of, say, a guy's a thief or he's at home, he breaks into homes. Well, if he's going to be a civil engineer, works at a desk, might not matter. Maybe he did that while ago.
Right.
She might be a home inspector. Be a big deal.
Well, and that's still going to come to you, though. Okay. Even if they take out good moral character, the criminal history, because we don't have anything in our statutes that say anything like, you know, if it was more than 5 years, something else that probably needs to be looked at. Mm-hmm. So if you had a DUI in 1998, it doesn't, you know, need to come to you, really, does it? But, yeah. But reasonable relationship and something like that, yeah, we kind of touched on that before. So anyway, that's it for me. And I don't think Scott has anything to report this month.
Nope.
So.
Speaking of good moral character, Scott.
Oh, thank you.
Standing committee reports. We probably don't have a report. Mike just jumped off the line and.
Well, it's just the minutes are there. They just talked about the standards of practice. I think they finally finalized what they like, and it's gone. It's going to go before the Arizona chapter of ASHI. They're going to review it, and they're going to come with me again, I think, sometime in April to come back to see what those changes might be, or maybe to hear the news if ASHI accepted it or not.
Right, and Ken, if you want to talk to Kurt and I a little bit before that meeting, so we just sort of give you a rundown on what's been going on, you probably feel more comfortable about it going into the meeting.
Okay. But you can't change your mind.
There's punishment.
Oh, right.
Actually, coming into it now is probably a lot easier. I mean, they have worked on these standards of practice, kind of beat them to death, so it's probably a good time. It'll be interesting. The L&R committee hasn't met, so we don't have anything to report there. The national councils, I don't really have anything new to talk about. I already mentioned the task analysis workshop. I don't have anything to report on ASBOG. Do you, Steve? And Clark, our landscape architects, Jack and I have had fun with that recently. Fun with Clark.
You call it fun. Quick summary, they're trying to come up with a uniform standard for qualifications for registration. And we got a model law that was shared with us. There's only 50 pages. But it really addresses if we were a standalone board, landscape architects were not. So most of that really did apply. And it gets into education experience and the stuff we already talked about. And we made it clear that Arizona, if we want to change anything, it has to go through our legislature. But we also established the understanding that if Arizona wanted to exceed that requirement above what the model law was all about, that we have that right still to do that. It really comes down to education. I think there was only one item that was changing. They were going to give 6 years of experience requirement if you didn't have a accredited degree. We're still a combination 8. So it's 8 years experience or some combination of education and experience. So I think it's been that way forever, so I think we'll keep that. But Clark was thinking about maybe reducing some of those, but it's up to us if we want to change that.
If I had a wish list for the CLARB issues, we in our statute accept an LAAB accredited degree, but the Canadian equivalency of LAAB is LAAC, and we don't have any language to speak to that, and it would be helpful, I think, if we did it. So.
How do we get that added? Is that a legislative action or is it a board action?
It's a legislative
Yikes.
Action.
Don't want to go there yet.
Did you laugh out loud? I have high hopes. I have good things that I think that the legislature will be happy with. So I have high aspirations for these things. Mike Kaleka was going to give us a... sorry, did you have anything else?
No, that was it.
Jack. With NCARB, Mike was going to talk a little bit about that, but he had to pop off. So, I don't know that. I mean, there's always good things going on with the associations. I don't know that there's something specifically that we need to talk about. And I know we've been in a meeting for a long time. So I'll just go straight to NCWS. And in addition to everything wonderful that Mr. Bishop said, and I'll just say, Engineer Land Surveyor Board members, Helmuth and Clarence, remember to log into your NC's account and look for the survey link to the Committee of Preference survey if you have not already done so.
What is this for?
They're looking for committee members. There's a committee preference survey.
Yeah, I've gotten several emails.
Also, the revised bylaws were posted on the NCWS website. Any proposed amendments to those proposed revisions must be submitted at least 60 days prior to the date of the earliest zone meeting, and our zone meeting is May 19th through the 21st. Still currently planned in person only, and primary purpose, as I understand it, is discussions taking place on boards, standing committees, task forces, the board of directors, and CEO of NCWS, as well as elect new zone vice president and assistant vice president. And which I feel guilty saying this, but I want to go so much. I can't even tell you what. Kurt is going to go, and I'm super grateful Kurt is going to go. My youngest daughter's graduating high school, like, right then. And she was like, you're not missing that. I'm like, no, I can't miss that. So what are the odds? So I'm not going to be able to attend that. I'm really sad. But don't tell my daughter. But Kurt will do a great job and come back and tell us all about it.
Hope she doesn't listen to these meetings.
Oh, no way. Seriously, if you were 17, would you okay, so future agenda topics. We could talk about the
plumbing letter.
Plumbing letter, yep. Plumbing letter. Was there anything else?
I do want to talk about the gentleman's issue of alarm control person for small businesses or doing business as.
I don't, but if anybody, do you want to talk about the other
probably, right?
Public comment? With
that would go through L&R committee first? Can we push it on them? And
we could. We could do that. is that what the L&R committee means?
The L&R.
Well, I mean, you know, if you want them to kick it around, talk about it.
Yeah. He's just trying to reduce the qualifications.
He doesn't want to. Well, we can't talk about it. Okay.
Oh, that's right. Cattle prod.
I think I understood what he is looking for, but yeah. Okay. All right. Next meeting, March 22nd here. And then after that, it's a TBD, where we'll be meeting for the following months after that.
In terms of the which room?
Probably not even in this building.
No?
It'll probably be in another building. So, okay. How fun.
Another building?
So, somewhere right here in the Capitol Mall area. So, we'll make sure and give you lots of instructions. And that should do it, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Anybody else have anything you want to bring up? Okay. But,
ooh, 1 o'clock right on the button.
Let's adjourn this session then. Thank you.
All right.